Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Global Fact Radio. Global Fact Radio brings you such shows as Conscious Living, How To with Dean Clifford, and Truth Talk. Don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Alright. Today, featuring How To with Dean Clifford.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode. I believe it's episode 10 of How to with Dean Clifford. My name is Tony Boutros. I'm your host, as usual. And Dean is not online with me just yet. I was speaking to him on the phone, then he had to make a call. And I said I will call him in at the top of the hour, which is now. So if you just bear with me, I'll get Dean on the line.
Hello.
There you are, Dean. We're live in the air.
Oh, already?
Already, yeah. But just give me a second here.
That was quick.
Did you finish your call?
Yeah, I just made a quick phone call there just because I know I'm going to be tied up now for 2 hours. So.
Perfect. Okay, I'm just going to go through the announcements then, so hold on a second here. So,
okay.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you that if you wish to ask questions of Dean on the air, which is the best way to do it, because questions on the air take priority over in the chat or the email, and you can do that by dialing 646-478-5728, except today I'm going to put a little restriction here. The restriction is that you ask your question, Dean answers it, and you can ask another question, and then we'll have to stop there because people were hogging the airtime, and I don't think it's fair to others. If we have the time to allow it, then I'll let you have your freedom, but if I find people are waiting to have questions answered, then I will stop you after your second question. If you wish to ask questions on the chat, that could be done by logging in. And if you log in using your Facebook account and or your Twitter account, that would help us out by giving us a little bit more publicity and get the show more popular. Speaking of publicity, I did notice on the Global Fact fan page that there were, for today's episode, which is about invisible contracts, how to rid yourself of your social insurance number, I noticed that 114 people saw the post about today's episode. Of the 114, only 10 were viral. So that tells me that most people are finding out about it by directly going to the Global Fact fan page, and the other 10 are getting it through links, people sending them links. I'd like to see that viral number get a little higher. So I encourage all our listeners, when you know when an upcoming episode, send links to whoever you know who you think would benefit from Dean's information. And that's how this thing will spread, and we'll get more and more people listening in. Going on with the announcements, if you wish to mail in your question to Dean, you can do so by sending it to askdean@globalfact2012.com. And for those of you who have not yet done so, please click the follow button on our profile page, which you can find at this link that I'm going to post right now in the chat room. There it is. Just go to that link, and then underneath our logo, you'll see a blue button that says follow. If you haven't done so already, please click on that. That would be appreciated. If you haven't done so already and you wish to like our page, the Global Fact fan page, which is where I post all future episodes for How To with Dean Clifford, that's the link for that as well. And the last link I want to share with you is about the Global Fact group, the discussion group. And it's kind of similar to the forum that Dean has going. So if you wish to discuss things regarding all matters pertaining to corruption in government, the Illuminati, the New World Order, or whatever the case may be, you can do that as well, and that's the link for that. I just posted it up. So today's topic, once again, is the Invisible Contracts, How to Rid Yourself of the S-I-N. And I'm going to turn the mic over to our star, Mr. Dean Clifford.
Greetings.
Greetings.
Oh, boy. Well, I think I got most of any anger I had out of my system today. Already out on a little video I posted on my Facebook earlier today. I was kind of having at law enforcement and the government over the last 24 hours just because I got to go through these little phases and little moods. But I actually did try to put up an audio file today to go along with one of my little rants just to prove something, because I don't think a lot of people realize that for 2 years here, I did do the very nice approach, like the very where you do treat the police with respect. And I've got a couple of audios on that from several different encounters where I do go through every point of law with them, and I bring up every statute, and I bring up every piece of case law, and I talk about the Bill of Rights and their charter, and I talk about the BNA, and I talk about Her Majesty as opposed to Her Majesty in Right of Canada, as opposed to Her Majesty in Right of, or Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, and I walk them right through everything, and I'm very polite with them, and I'm very nice with them, and I'm being very politically correct with them, if you want to call that, diplomatic, and I'm just like, look, you know, I don't want to endanger you here on the highway tonight. You want to go home to your family. I just want to go home to my family. But you don't have the right to do what you're doing. And we go through the whole thing. And the only place that got me the first time was jail. The second time was my truck taken anyways, where they admit right on the audio files, you don't have a license to drive, you don't have an insurance plate, you don't have insurance, you don't have this, you don't have that, la da la da 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 da. And I point out everything that's relevant, including the Bill of Rights, where it clearly states that they lack the authority to deprive me of my private property without due process of law. Everything. And they just don't care. Or in the audio I was going to post today, you'll clearly hear the guy say, that's the one where he says, well, that's nice, sir, but unfortunately, that's a piece of American legislation, which I then go off about how he doesn't even know that Canada has a Bill of Rights. So I've done that. I've been down that road. I've tried the diplomatic angle. I've tried the niceties. I've tried everything. And that's the reason my attitude now is that, you know what, I just don't care. I don't care. I've done my due diligence. I spent 10, 12 years reading this stuff after being involved in this for 15 years. Now I can recite this stuff, pop, 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 in the courts, on the side of the highway, you name it, they don't care. They hire the most ignorant people you can imagine to deal with you at the side of the road, who clearly tell you, sir, I'm not here to get into a legal discussion with you or an intellectual conversation. Okay, they're not there for that. They're there just to beat you and take your property and or fine you. That's their job. You're not going to reason with them. So until that changes, I see no reason for me to change. So a lot of people have kind of, especially recently, I've gotten some feedback from a few people who were, you know, like, why, Dean, you're using the potty word. Like, that's not very nice. You should treat people with respect. And another guy that actually said, like, you got to clean up your shows, because, I mean, like, what if I wanted my grandmother to learn this stuff and listen to your show? And so things like that. And first off, it's like, okay, wait a minute. My grandmother's 90. I would not want her to listen to my shows, nor would I want her out in the street getting into in the middle of an uncivil war with the government, trying to fight for human rights, okay? They're retired. That's my job. If you want your grandmother to go fight your battles for you, maybe she's tougher than you, I don't know, then get her to listen to the show, because if she's tougher than you in a fight, she might appreciate my shows more than you do and the potty language. Second of all, when people try to tell me it's not nice, some of the things I say to cops and to government, well, that's not nice. You should love everyone and equally and treat them with respect, and that's not very nice, Dean. My answer to this is, okay, you want respect and you want nice? I'll tell you what's not nice. What's not nice is stealing private property. What's not nice is putting people in handcuffs and arresting them and throwing them in jail when they've committed no crime. Because you were told that you could do that kind of stuff when you were given your magic talisman, your badge. Okay? That's not nice. Throwing somebody in jail for 20 days is not nice. Telling somebody to take their clothes off, we can do this the hard way or we can do this the easy way. You decide. That's not nice. In fact, most people call that rape when it's not the police or corrections officers doing it. Okay? Being dehumanized is not nice. Nothing these people have done to me is nice. And I think the fact that I have yet to take a baseball bat and go smash someone's fucking face right in over this stuff is me being nice. I am being nice. I'm going to take the peaceful road. They can be assholes all they want. They can throw me in jail. They can steal my property. I'm going to grin, but I'm going to use foul language when I refer to them. And if that's my outlet, then that's going to be my outlet, okay? But I can give people all the nice information they want. So I'm going to release the 2 hours of nice recordings where I was nice as pie to these guys and just tried to educate them, and they don't care, and they make it very clear that they don't care. Yeah, that's nice. Tell it to the judge. Yeah, we don't care. Yeah, that's what we got courts for. Oops, hang on, I gotta shut that off. Not sure why that kicked in. Anyways, okay, so I just wanted to address that real quick, so because people are kind of wondering, like, why I've got a bit of a bad attitude when it comes to the cops and the government sometimes, and that's where the bad attitude comes from, because I've done the nice approach. They don't care. Okay, their job is there. Their job is to come and to force compliance from you, to intimidate you, to steal from you, to throw you in jail, put you in handcuffs, and to make you compliant when you go to jail. And I even I spoke with Rob Menard tonight, actually, real quick before the show, and I told him I wanted to bring this up real quick because he has a friend in BC right now, and it's actually I consider him a friend of mine as well, Jody, a fellow I met when I was out there in BC last. And this is how dishonorable these people are acting now. So this is why I'm not nice anymore. I'd mentioned last week that now the courthouses are sending registered mail back, and they are purging the court files of all your previous documents, and they're changing court file numbers now. So this isn't about you just learning your rights anymore. Now they're just being pure sneaky and underhanded. They're just being the sickening cowards that we know they are. So that's why I'm being disgruntled. When they do that kind of stuff, like to my brother, when they're waving tasers in his eyes, and he's saying, "Are you guys, what's wrong with you? Like, don't point that in my eyes. You can blind people." And then when the cop's going to taser him anyways for no reason, Darren says, and my brother says, are you stupid? What's, those things kill people. And again, the reply is, "Yeah, I'm certain they do." Okay? These are not honorable people. They need to be spoken to with any form of respect. The Jody guy out in BC, and Rob said I could bring it up real quick. He's in jail right now, literally, apparently, because he was due for his fourth appearance this morning, on a, I think it was a biking, like a mountain bike or something like that, without a helmet, a fine or a charge. So on his fourth appearance, and he was doing very well, and he's going to obviously win, the sheriff came up and asked him to come someplace with them real quick, even though he was a half an hour early for his hearing. And while he was downstairs, they issued a warrant for his arrest for non-appearance, on purpose, knowing he was there. They lured him out of the courtroom, even though he was due at, I think, 9:30. This was at 9 a.m. And when he walked back up there, he walked in at 9:30 a.m. when his hearing was, and they arrested him on the spot for failure to appear, didn't take him before a justice of the peace or anything, and just threw him in jail for the night. Okay? These are not honorable people. They don't deserve to be talked about with respect. The people that they call judges on the benches in provincial court, they are not judges. I owe them no respect. I've been before real judges in Queen's Bench, and those are real judges. They're very nice. They sit there and they listen to both sides. They don't start screaming at you and telling you to shut up, or they're going to have the sheriff drag you out back and beat you half to death. Okay? So I want to make people very clear on and distinguish in the system here the fact that these provincial courts, the courtrooms, were being tricked into going into, tricked, dragged, beaten, whatever you want to call it. They're not courtrooms. They're not judges, and those are not peace officers. So we don't owe our enemies, our adversaries, any ounce of respect. So I'm sure a number of people have seen my post on Facebook over the last couple of days about exactly what I think about government, and I have yet to see anything to prove that that's not true. We've got judges in Manitoba who are part of sex rings. They've been exposed. That was all over the news. We've got politicians that have been involved in the same type of ordeals in the news. We've got politicians like Sven Robinson. I don't know if people remember this. We've got politicians who steal from jewelry stores. And when they get caught, and only because they get caught, they go crying in front of the cameras. Oh, Sven, oh, you know, it's just Sven. He's our gay member of parliament. He's just quirky like that. He's still, oh, Sven, you crazy guy, you know, and they give him a noogie and he little fake couple of tears on TV and, oh, the Crown's not gonna proceed with charges. Really? Really? Okay. So, these people are not owed any respect. I have no respect for the Canadian government at all. They are deserving of none of it. So that's where my attitude comes. They were given the nice opportunity. I've given them the nice opportunity many times now. They were sent many offers of peace from me, little truces, where all they had to do, it's a matter of point for me. All you had to do is give me back my truck. That's it. I don't even want the thing back. I've bought two more. But it's my truck. I still want it back. I'm not going to get it. You're going to bring it to me. When someone steals my TV and they call me 2 years later and say, oh, hey, dude, I stole your TV. Come pick it up. No, dude, until you bring it back to me, it's stolen. Okay? So they're not deserving my respect. I'm going to continue with the verbal bashing, the verbal tirades. I want people to know exactly what I think of them. I don't think it's really been that much of a secret anyways. But a lot of people seem to enjoy it because I think I'm just saying what other people want to say. And maybe other people are afraid that maybe if they go on Facebook and they say some of the things that I do, that, you know, next thing you know, the cops are going to be at the door. Good. I welcome it. Come on by, guys. I've been wanting to have a little chat with you. So that's my little blurb for today on that matter. So I'm going to release the first 12 minutes as soon as I can figure out how to do it of audio files from that encounter in BC. People can see what happens when you're nice and when you memorize every law. Which leads me to a point I'm going to get to tonight, to the invisible contracts, by the way. We're going to get into that because I got another email this morning that perfectly leads us into this discussion. But you'll see exactly what happens when you memorize the law and you know, well, their laws, sorry, statutes. You know everything, or you think you do, which I think I do at times. I went into... It was the nice approach, and that's not what they were there for. So this is why I keep telling people again that it's not about the paperwork that you file into the courts, the perfect document that's going to rebut everything that the Crown claimed against you. The minute they read this affidavit, they're going to run screaming from the courtroom and the judge is going to get up and run out of the courtroom. And don't get me wrong, that stuff has actually happened. There are a few documents that can help with that. But you have to know what that document actually means. You have to be able to speak to it. Otherwise, and this is where the invisible contract parts come in, is they know that you have no idea what you're talking about. And that you just possibly found a couple of lines online to say, or you've got a very rudimentary understanding of what's going on. And because you filed three different documents and all three of them dealt with a separate jurisdictional issue, they know that you're just kind of throwing stuff out there as well, just to see what sticks, right? Like throwing everything but the kitchen sink at them just to see what sticks. And they're just going to proceed on the assumptions and presumptions that the court operates off of. And that's a contract, by the way. That is one of the invisible contracts. By showing up to answer to one of these charges, and that's the cop's only job, is to get you to answer to one of these charges. They're not interested in your rights. They're not interested in property rights. They're not interested in anything but issuing you a ticket. and or arresting you on the spot and or stealing your property or generating revenue of some kind, because that's what they are. And I got into that, by the way, in the 12 minutes. We got into the difference between they admitted to being peace officers, and then they proceeded to try to contract with me through statutes. And I brought that up, that that's actually malfeasance of office, and it's fraud because they pulled me over under one presumption, I guess, or I'm not trying to think of the proper word here. They pulled me over allegedly as peace officers. And then when they had to admit that there was no breach of the peace, they immediately switched to law enforcement agents. You can't do that. But they did, and they didn't care. They just went on like they don't, whatever. They just, whatever, we're taking your truck. We don't care. So so I get a message today that the same thing has just happened this morning in the courts in Winnipeg, I guess, with a fellow that was looking for some help. And I'm not sure whether or not he understood what a revocation of power of attorney is, what it does, or what it's even for, but apparently one of them got filed into the court, a document basically where they're saying that they waive the right to be recognized as a person, and I think maybe one other document. And what had happened was the Crown had just stood up and said that they were in receipt. I haven't got the full story yet. I just had a blurb. I actually wish I had a chance to speak to the person, but I wanted to talk about it tonight's show. I won't say who anybody was, but the Crown just got up. Doesn't matter what the documents were. So this would apply to everybody listening tonight and is going to listen to this episode. Whatever documents were sent in, this is what they do. And the Crown just said, we're in receipt of some documents. Some blah, 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 yada, yada. We don't know what this means. We don't really care. It has no standing. We don't recognize any of it. We're just going to proceed. And then the judge immediately pipes in, and I've witnessed this myself. I'm going to agree with the Crown, right? and then they basically say, if you don't have a lawyer, we're just going to go ahead with trial tomorrow or in a week or 2 weeks. We're just scheduling trial. Go get a lawyer. We don't care about anything you filed. So they do that. And then people leave the court, and they're like, and then they leave the courtroom, and I get an email, and they're like, well, the Crown said that my stuff was all crap, and the judge agreed with them. And the first thing I have to say to people is that's why they know that you have no clue what's going on in that courtroom and that you're not going to stand up for your rights. Because, number one, you just accepted testimony from the Crown, first of all. Second of all, the judge... You accepted his opinion on some matter. Like his opinion has any relevance in that courtroom. Well, it's my opinion. This is what happened to me out in BC when the judge said, well, it's my opinion that. And I said, I don't care about your opinion. I'm not here for your opinion. Are you making a determination or not? Well, I don't agree with your application of the this particular piece of case law. I said, I don't care if you agree with it or not. Are you making a determination? I'm not here for your opinion. I don't care whether or not you agree with that person or with me. Your agreement means nothing to me. I want your determination. Are you making a ruling? That's what you're there for. You're not there for his opinion. Especially when there's not even a chance that guy read the documents at the court. What, is the guy now a speed reader from 30 feet away? Yeah, Your Honor, we received a bunch of crap in the mail. We don't recognize it. It was a bunch of documents, affidavits, stuff like that. It's all nonsense. Oh, well, I'm going to have to agree with the Crown on that. Really? Really? Wow, that you must be God, because you just read that in 0.5 seconds from 40 feet across the room. You must be fucking God. I actually changed my opinion. Before I came in here, I thought you were just a shitheel. But you actually really must be God, because you just read that from 40 feet away. You speed read it in 0.5 seconds and made a determination in bam, just like that. Man, and you get down and bow to that guy and just show you really are God. I'm impressed. Okay, that guy didn't read shit. It's all scripted. They know all they have to do is say, Yeah, we read it. It's nonsense. Yeah, I agree with the Crown. Let's proceed. And you're just going to go, oh, man, this stuff doesn't work. No, it's not the material. You are not standing with your paperwork. You're not getting in their face. You're not saying, excuse me. Did you even read my affidavit? Do you know who I am? Because if you don't understand who I am, how could you possibly know what my rights are? Or is all that irrelevant here as well? Am I in a courtroom where my standing and my rights are irrelevant? Because if that's where we are, then I already know that I'm in the wrong type of courtroom. This is not a venue that I should be in. So I'm leaving. Don't talk to me again, because I want nothing to do with whatever you people are. Because apparently whoever you are don't recognize my rights. And I'll be fucked if I'm going to take part in something that doesn't recognize my rights. If you want me here again, it's going to be in handcuffs and without my consent. And I will not take part in any proceedings. That's what somebody who knows what's going on would say. Maybe without the expletives, because they want to make sure that they treat that honorable court with the respect that it deserves. Okay? That's what somebody who knows what's good, that's somebody who's confident in their rights, who doesn't need paperwork, would be able to walk in there and destroy them in 30 seconds or less. Are you trying to tell me I have no rights here, Mr. Justice, whoever you are? Oh, and by the way, man on the bench who just agreed with the Crown in 0.5 seconds. I need to qualify you. Exactly who are you, by the way? I've never seen you before in my life. But apparently you can make an instantaneous ruling on what my rights are. So you must know me. Why don't you tell me all about me? Tell me who I am and what my rights are. Oh, wise one. Maybe leave that out if you want to be nice. I like throwing little things like that in there, especially when I'm talking to you guys. Okay? That's where they start to get flustered and tripped up, because now you're asking them to prove up. They have to prove things. Okay? They have to prove this stuff. Okay? I want to know who you are. Dude on the bench. What's your full name? Who are you? What are your qualifications? And they'll try to say they don't have to answer any of that crap. And you say, yeah, you know what? Well, until you prove to me who you are, and I want to see your credentials, I'm going to assume that you are a bum, a homeless bum they found out back this morning, eating from the dumpster. And they said, hey, buddy, get in here. We need somebody to sit up on this bench and just nod their head up and down anytime the Crown says something. Can you do that? Well, yeah, I can do that. Okay, I'm going to assume that's who you are. Because until you prove differently, I have no reason to believe that that's not who you are. Because I have every reason to believe that these people would put a homeless bum eating from a dumpster out back on that bench just to screw me over, because that's just the kind of people they are. So I need to make sure who you are, please. I wouldn't speak another word until that person qualifies them. In fact, I'm leaving. When you guys get your shit sorted out and you can prove who you are, maybe I'll come back. Go into it from there. Say, oh, and by the way, until you make a ruling that my sovereign rights as one of the people of this land will be protected in this courtroom, I'm not participating in anything. I'm not participating in anything. So, are you going to make a ruling? Is it your determination? Or just tell me. Just flat out tell me yes or no. Will my sovereign rights as one of the people of this land be protected in this courtroom? If I answer to that name, if I take part in these proceedings and answer to whatever the Crown is claiming that I am, because we don't even know what that is yet. That's a presumption. This court's operating on a presumption that I'm something that the Crown has jurisdiction over. I'm something that the Crown has the authority to drag in here. Like a fucking dog on a leash in chains. Until you guys guarantee that my sovereign rights, one of the people of this land, are going to be protected, why would I ever, ever consent to take part in whatever hearing you guys are having here today? Okay, that doesn't take paperwork. But that certainly destroys just about every possible invisible contract that they could ever possibly have against you. And you could go on, because somebody knowledgeable on their rights would be able to do all this without the paperwork, instead of just, did you get my paperwork? Yes, I got your paperwork. Well, did you read it? Yeah, I read it, understood it, and I read it, and it's garbage. Oh. So we're going to have a hearing tomorrow. Trial. We're starting trial tomorrow. And if you don't show up, we're going to send police out to arrest you. And you will come to trial. Oh. Okay. Then they walk out of the courtroom, and then they think that maybe the paperwork failed. Paperwork never fails. You can't speak to it. Because if you could, you wouldn't need the paperwork in the first place. So that's what I've been trying to get out there to people. And this is what leads into the invisible contracts part of this. You're contracting with the court just by going there. You're contracting with them just by answering to the name without qualifying who it is they're asking for. Okay? If you're entering into a contract, people, and you're not putting any of your own terms in there, you're going to get hosed. That's an invisible contract. By just showing up and entering a plea, you are saying, yeah, I consent to this jurisdiction. I will agree to be surety for whatever determination this court makes. And I'm okay with absolutely every presumption that this court's going to operate off of. So I consent to procedure. I consent to procedure, and I'm willing to waive every deficiency in the Crown's claim. As soon as you do that, you're sunk. There's no possible way you could win in that scenario. That's like walking into Vegas, into a casino in Las Vegas, and agreeing to play a game of dice where there's only one die thrown with numbers 1 to 6, and you pick number 7, and say, yeah, when you roll a 7 with that one die, I get $1 million. And everybody in Vegas is going to be sitting there snickering, and you're going to be going, whoa, what's going on? What? Okay, you'll never get a 7, clearly, but that's now the game. It's set up to lose, period. Those are the invisible contracts at play right now. And all you have to do is start talking about this stuff in the court. Just be honest. Say, it's my understanding that if I answer to that name, I've entered into a contract with you people, and I don't know the terms of that contract. Is that true? Well, how hard was that to say? Especially now that you know that is the case. Okay, and they'll try to, and you hear a bunch of farting noises. They'll go on about something else or try to convince you that, oh, you're one of those free men, you know. And the smart and experienced person, the minute they hear somebody say, oh, you're one of those free men, especially a judge, you'll just interject right there and say, excuse me, did you just profile me? Are you discriminating against me because you believe me to be a free man? So you've profiled me and you've discriminated against me, and this is only the first sentence you've said today to me. Who in their right mind would contract with you? The first sentence out of your mouth just violated two of my human rights. I'm leaving. You're a retard. And leave. Okay? You're contracting with the court, and you don't know the terms. You're not setting any terms. And that's why I brought up the special appearance last time. You want to make it clear that before you consent to even take part in this, that you want to get some terms established here, right? Isn't that what the nobles did back in the day? You know, we're going to go to war. Let's establish some terms. Okay, no doing this, no doing this. That's what a courtroom is supposed to be, isn't it? It's supposed to be terms of the engagement. Well, you're not setting any terms. You're making general appearance, and you're allowing absolutely every term that the Crown has brought. Every term. And you don't even know what they are, but you just agreed to them. Now, and I'm not doing this to belittle people or berate people or to make people feel stupid. There's almost no chance that we could know about this stuff. And that's what makes it so disgusting and dishonorable. And they'll try to say things like, oh, we told you, we gave you full disclosure. If you just read all these statutes, and over the last 100 years, we've released this all in legal notices in the newspapers, and, well, it's your ignorance that you don't know any of this stuff. Really, that's my ignorance? That you people have created all this absolute shit? That you think I really care to take the time to learn, to know, that when I walk in here thinking you people are being honorable and I even have a chance of arguing some statute, that really I'm entering into contracts that I couldn't hope to fucking win if my life depended on it? You people honestly think that that's an honorable court and that I'm just ignorant because I don't know what's going on? Wow. No. So, in fact, it's so bad that most lawyers don't even know that's what's going on there. So that's what makes it even worse. And just hiring a lawyer automatically binds you to procedure because, gee, what are lawyers licensed to practice? Every single lawyer in that courtroom is trained in procedure, court procedure, the same procedures that bind you to invisible contracts that are designed to hoop you, to screw you, to ensure that you don't stand a chance, except for the 2% of cases that they do throw out just to give the illusion that people actually do win once in a while. Okay? It's like the lottery. I'm not kidding. It's really like the lottery. Well, we better let the people see at least somebody win today. Otherwise, well, they're just going to realize that we're just absolutely screwing them. That there is no hope of winning here. Oh, yeah, you got a really good point there. How much is this guy's fine? $35? Okay, yeah, we can lose $35 today. Okay. Oh, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, congratulations. See, this is the system working. People need to take part in the system. They need to give the system a chance. This man just won. See, then they go into what are those salesmen that go around promoting the one guy that won? You know? Look, everybody, this man just won, like the series Deadwood there, where that guy goes around with the bars of soap that have a dollar bill in it. You know, look, oh my, look, I won a $1 bill, oh my God. And everybody, oh, where'd you get that? Oh, that man's selling them right down there. Okay, that's what court is. If everybody lost, people would realize that they shouldn't even bother going. So one or two do win. It's good for business. You want to make it look like people win once in a while. If nobody won the lottery, who would keep buying tickets? So there's the invisible contracts in the provincial court anyways. I know we were going to talk about the SIN number a bit again tonight, and there's all sorts of arguments you can make on something like, say, the SIN number application. And again, this is where it's going to come back down to, do you want to rid yourself of that number? And I know I spoke about this last time where I said, look, or maybe it wasn't with you guys, I can't remember, but the birth certificate, the SIN number contract, sorry, I'm trying to pull the website up again here so I can read the chat thing without it blaring in the background so I know what people are talking about. The social insurance number is an account number. And I'm sure I did speak about this last time. And that's all it is the best description I've ever heard for it is a pass-through account. I love that description. And the reason I love that description is because the account carries no balance. It's just a pass-through from one party to the other. And it's not the number that's the problem. It's your relationship to it. Okay? I would probably see an account number as a very bad thing if I was always the accounts payable on that bank account number, right? If you're always the company that's in debt and has to pay, you probably wouldn't want that account number anymore either. So I think people should first readjust their line of thinking with regards to the social insurance number, and if they want to capitalize on some of their knowledge and start to use it for their benefit. Now, the other problem with that is there might be a lot of people out there like myself who are starting to lean more and more towards, let me rephrase this, not leaving the system entirely. We just kind of want to participate less in it. We want to, myself, I'm not going to speak for everybody, we want to participate in the system to the effect that our person is just an investment. Our little franchise that we own that we may or may not get a benefit from every once in a while. But for the most part, we're just kind of existing outside of that whole commercial system, and we're just going about our own daily business now, doing our own thing, and we're marginalizing the government and that system. That's my word for the week, by the way, marginalized. I love that word. They've been marginalized. I've marginalized them. They're over there on the margin. They're not in the main body, the main paragraph of my life anymore. They're in the margin. And when they show up, it can say, hey, what are you doing? Get back in the margin. You got nothing to do with the main party. You get back over there. You know where you're supposed to be. You get back over there. You've been marginalized. So that's my word for the week, marginalized. I like that one. It's a good word. We want to marginalize them in our lives. And that just means not using the social insurance number almost at all times. Only when we have to. If we have to. If there is a reason for even using it. You don't need it on bank accounts. You don't need it for employment, so to speak, for a lot of people. If you want to work for some mainstream corporations, that's fine, but I see the balance of power shifting in that in the next couple of years. I see private contractors and private businesses and private markets, if you want to call it that, taking off, and corporations starting to be marginalized and collapsing, because really all they are, they've now consolidated to the point where there's only like one or two corporations left on Earth that basically own every other corporation. They can't, there's no more corporations out there to swallow up. And the number one rule in corporations and with anything for the most part is once something stops growing, it dies. So once these corporations stop growing, once they've already consumed everything, they'll die. This whole system is going to die right away. So that's why we should especially be building our own little our own new industries and our own businesses and organizations. But anyways, back to the SIN number. So just start using it less and start to slowly extract yourself and just make the other part of your life bigger and make that part of your life smaller. And then you don't have to get rid of the social insurance number. You may want to keep it around. What happens if you got rid of it and 2 years from now you figured out something and just went, oh, shit. I know how I can collect on something now. But fuck, I needed that social insurance number and I got rid of it. I needed that bank account that was there because it's the only way I had to access this particular remedy, and now it's not there anymore. Whereas I could have just left it alone and not used it, right? But now that option's gone for me. And it was Dean Clifford that told me to get rid of that. So that's the worst part. You come to me and you tell me that, I'm going to say, ooh, no, no. I remember episode 10 where I said, no, you don't want to do that. Or that's your choice. Think about it. Weigh all the options. But if you're really hell-bent on getting rid of it, I always like to start with anytime I'm going to a law or addressing a topic, you do the reverse of what most people who research law normally do, right? They're reading a statute, and they want to know what a word means. So they look up to see if that word has been redefined in that particular statute. If it hasn't, they go to the Interpretation Act of Canada, or for the province, depending on what that statute came from, Parliament or Legislative Assembly. And if that word has not been redefined in the Interpretation Act, then they go back to, say, a Canadian law dictionary. If it hasn't been redefined in a Canadian law dictionary or there's no definition that they like, then they'll go abroad and they'll start looking for a definition they like, which is the incorrect way of doing that. But they'll work their way back to a Canadian law dictionary. They start within the act to see if the word's been redefined there. Oh, and if, for you newbies, by the way, I guess that's another thing, too, is for you newbies out there, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Canada has something called the Interpretation Act, where they have redefined all the meanings of words, and that's how the words are defined for their use in statutes. So when you think you're saying one word and you know what it means because you went to school, you have no idea what that word means because they redefined it. So if they redefine up to mean left, and they redefine black to mean white, and they redefine up to mean down, are you going to have any clue what you're saying in a courtroom? No. Again, you could almost consider that an invisible contract. You have no idea what definitions of words you're contracting to use, okay? Because it's all invisible. It's all within their jurisdiction. So that's just one of the other sneaky things that they do. Everything is based on deception, lies, fraud, and keeping you ignorant as possible and not knowing what's going on. Because if you knew what was going on, they wouldn't get away with anything. So their system is not honorable. Don't treat it with honor. So the social insurance number. So I like to go back to like some of the highest laws first. So let's attack this from a highest law. Well, there was a social insurance number that was filled out. People just get it now when they're born. Sorry, I'm just reading the chat board and I lose my place sometimes. I wouldn't start off with an act or a statute that's confined to my having filled out that form, because here's the first problem. Is a lot of people now get a social insurance number right from birth. Or like me, they were 14 years old when they got it. Because I was told, well, Dean, if you want to work in Canada, you're going to need yourself a social insurance number because it's illegal to work in Canada without one of them. So you're told to go out and get one. And you show up at whatever building that is, a government building, and you apply for one when you're 14 years old. So you're below the age of the ability to contract lawfully for yourself. And then the staff there are telling you how to fill it out. Number two, oh, well, check off this and fill out this and, yeah, check off this box and, oh, are you a resident? Well, I think I know what resident means, so I guess I would be. Okay, well, check off the resident box and check. Okay, they're filling it out for you. They're just getting you to sign it because you have no idea what any of that means. So number two, it can't possibly be a valid contract. So I'm not confined to the terms that might be set out in some act to remove myself from the social insurance number in the first place, because it was never a valid contract. I don't have to use whatever forms they've put in place to extricate myself from that number, if I'm even really bound to it, because it's not my number. It's theirs. So I could just, some of the arguments right there is, number one, there was no full disclosure, right? There's no full disclosure. I have no idea what this number does. I was just told that if I don't get one, I can't work. I'm not allowed to work any. I'm not allowed to work if I don't get one of these. That's what I was told. Okay? So no disclosure. They willfully misrepresented the facts. You were specifically told you cannot work without this number. Okay, so that's another out to that even being possibly being a binding contract. What was the valuable consideration? What could you possibly get from that contract? And my answer to that is nothing. And there's people that argue with me on this, and I will stand by my personal beliefs on this, that there is nothing that Canada could possibly offer you that you do not already have yourself. And the reason for that is very simple. Everything Canada has, it got from you. Canada does not have one thing that you didn't give it, because they are nothing. They're a holding company. They had nothing until you came along and granted something to them. That means they have nothing of value to offer you. The only thing they have is your stuff. You cannot offer me my own equity back and attach conditions to it. It's impossible. So that also makes it void. There's no possible valuable consideration. If I'm wrong, I would love to see anybody prove it anywhere. So there's about four things right there, and we know that the terms and conditions of a valid binding contract are A, consent, B, full disclosure of the facts of the of the terms of the contract, and C, valuable consideration. Well, so far we've got none of those in this alleged contract. We have no full disclosure, and them saying, well, it's not our fault you didn't go read the act. Okay? No. That's not full disclosure. No valuable consideration, because it's not even possible. For them to say that the valuable consideration is that you give them 40% of what you make for the rest of your life, and then they will return 1% of that back to you if you live long enough to collect it, that is not a contract. Okay? So no consent, no full disclosure, no valuable consideration. And yeah, Derek is putting meeting of the minds there. That's absolutely correct. But I put the meeting of the minds into consent. I actually grouped that right into consent, because if there was no meeting of the mind, there's no possible way you could have consented to that, right? Because that's what consent basically alludes to, is that there was a meeting of the mind. Both people found it to be a mutually beneficial contract. Oh, that's the other thing that's missing from this contract. It's not mutually beneficial. It's unilateral, as far as I can tell, right? It's a one-way contract. You benefit nothing. Getting a little bit back of money that was stolen from you is not a beneficial contract for you. We're going to steal $500,000 from you over the course of your life, and you might get $20,000 back in your old age. But we've made $20 million off of reinvesting that $500,000 for you. Okay? That is not beneficial to you, because if you got that $500,000, you could have made the $20 million. So there's absolutely nothing in that form that could possibly be construed as being valid if you simply attack all the components of it. That may or may not be something that you want to do. Okay? So, but again, I think that to get rid of a social insurance number because it's misunderstood is probably a not good idea. Go ahead and do it, or don't do it. But then if you just go ahead and get rid of something because you just don't understand what it is, you're kind of repeating the same mistakes you just made when you got the number. You went and got it not knowing what it is, and now you just want to get rid of it real quick because you don't know what it is either. So I think that's kind of irresponsible. When it could be, like I say, a good thing depending on who you are. It seems to me, and this is one of the only real hints I'm going to give on this, is that CRA seems to be a very effective collection agency. Very, very effective. If I actually owed somebody money, they're about the last people on earth I would want coming after me. They will lien property. They will freeze bank accounts. They will come after your employer. They will have all sorts of RTPs put on your wages. They will destroy you to collect whatever debt they have been asked to go and collect. You don't want to be the receiving end of CRA on a legitimate debt. So that could be handy, because it turns out that most people have been deceived as to who they are. So maybe mull that over for a little while and sit on it before you want to go all of a sudden just start getting rid of social insurance numbers. It could be a very good thing. Might not be. Could be. I'll let you decide that. I'm just kind of putting the information out there. So I think that deals probably enough with the social insurance number, as far as I really care to get into it. Again, why go through and decipher the Income Tax Act to learn anything? I don't care about the Income Tax Act. It means nothing to me. Even if I do still have a social insurance number, it means nothing to me. And I think I've clearly established that learning all the acts and statutes does not help you. because we know a lot of them. We know them all very well. Russ out there in BC, he knows the Income Tax Act better than anyone I've ever seen. I was actually shocked the one day that I went there, and I doubt that. I'm sure that was even a poor performance on his part. And the guy can just rattle stuff off and correct special agents for the CRA that screw up which code section number it was or what it says, and he'll recite it word for word, okay? It did him no good. You're guilty. Because he's bound by all these invisible contracts now. That matter's already been decided, right? When you're arguing about what a particular part of an act says, and I brought this up last show, whether or not you want to consider this an invisible contract or not, but you're arguing about acts and statutes that you're not even qualified to be making determinations about. So what your determination of that act is irrelevant. That's why they're telling you to get a lawyer. You need a lawyer to tell you what that means, because you're not qualified to make determinations about it, which means that when you walk into court and you walk them through their own definitions and you read their acts and statutes out and say this definition is this, which in this act reads this way, and when you put it all together, there's only one possible thing that this particular statute could be saying, it doesn't matter even if you're right, because you're unqualified. Okay? You're not qualified to make determinations like that. That's what the judge is for. So thank you. Sit down. You're guilty. Because you're already in their jurisdiction. You're already contracted. You're already bound by the rules of engagement, the procedure of the court. And that's why we used to use the argument going back a couple of years now, when they would say, well, Mr. Clifford, you've been found guilty of something. I said, absolutely. I've been trying to plead guilty to the facts for 3 years now, or for 3 days now. I'm guilty of the facts. If I was accused of talking on the phone right now on Global Facts Radio, there's not much argument. Yep, absolutely, I'm in violation of that statute. That statute says that I can't, I don't know, whistle on Sunday at 12:30 p.m. And yep, looks like you got a cop that caught me whistling at 12:30 p.m. on a Sunday afternoon. There's no real argument there. I guess I'm guilty of the facts. The facts are that I did in fact violate that statute. But unfortunately, there's another fact. It's a fact that I don't give a shit, because it has nothing to do with me. I'm not bound by that. That's a much better argument in court. Right? The burden of proof is on the accuser to prove that I should give a flying shit about that statute. Because I can tell you right now that I don't. I don't give a flying shit about that statute. The burden of proof is on them to prove that it applies to me. And that's the other thing, the invisible contract angle with provincial court. We're sticking mostly with that, because you'll never have these kind of problems in Queen's Bench. This doesn't happen in Queen's Bench. This only happens in criminal stuff, because it's nonsense. You have no rights in provincial court with criminal charges. You have no rights. If you're being charged under a code or a statute, it's because you're a resident, agent, officer, whatever you want to call it, of that specific jurisdiction. So you start dismantling all the invisible contracts of procedure, and you say, look, I don't give two shits about that statute. That's not my jurisdiction. These people have made a false claim. They've brought me here. I'm here. I don't consent to that procedure or that jurisdiction. They have to prove that that applies to me. And I'm one of the people that land. I'm telling you right now, it doesn't. Despite anything that they have to the contrary, I rebut absolutely everything that they may try to bring against me. Now, then you get into, and this is the stuff that works when your paperwork fails. You should be able to speak to the paperwork about this. other ways to destroy. You don't even know what invisible contracts you might be entering into with these people just by speaking with them. So you definitely want to limit your appearance, special appearance, just to determining jurisdiction and what claims have been made against you. But then you tell them, all you got to do is say, look, it's my understanding that according to my rights, as I know them, and that's not open to your interpretation, by the way, Mr. Homeless, who was so formerly a homeless bum eating out of the dumpster out back. My understanding of my rights is that unless I've harmed somebody, meaning unless there's an injured party, and or unless I've broken a contract, that I'm not liable for anything. I cannot be held liable for anything. If that's not the rights I have in this courtroom, then I'm in the wrong courtroom. I'm in the wrong venue, because those are not my rights. We have a big problem here. My rights are that I am not liable, and I've committed no crime unless I've caused a harm to somebody and there's an injured party, or I've broken a contract. And I know right now that I haven't done either one of them, and I rebut any claim to the contrary. It's rebutted outright, as God is my witness.
But Dean.
Hello.
Yeah, question about that.
Yep.
I'm listening to everything you're saying, but here's where I see, and I may be wrong, here's where I see a flaw in this. The only time you can make that claim that unless you're causing harm to property or a person, unless you're violating a contract, none of that applies to you. Well, how can you do that when you're a holder of a social insurance number? Because doesn't that tie you into the system? And being tied into the system means you are now an agent of the system, or you've waived your rights?
Nope. And again, this this is what we've covered in previous episodes, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm sure there are lots of beginners out there thinking that again right now. Is everything you do in life on duty for Tim Hortons? If Tim Hortons policy applies while you're on duty at Tim Hortons, you may be an employee at Tim Hortons. Are you always an employee at Tim Hortons? Is everything that you do in life, 24 hours a day, breathing, eating, sleeping, in the shower, you're a Tim Hortons employee and Tim Hortons policies apply to you? No, that's utter nonsense. The social insurance number has to do with the person, not you personally, because you're assigning authority on behalf of the person. Okay? The all caps letter name, the franchise, legal fiction, trust, whatever you want to call it, because it depends on how far you want to go back up the ladder. It's all those things. That's on the social insurance number card. The number is for that person. You are not that person. That person is a small part of you. Like if you were to have a 1 second a week job at Tim Hortons. Yeah, I work 1 second a week at Tim Hortons. So that 1 second a week that I'm on duty is when their policies apply to me. Or it could be never. Tim Hortons could be a job that never applies. Yeah, I've been an employee at Tim Hortons for 30 years now. I've never had one shift. I don't even know why I keep that job. But it's there if I want it. Okay? That's what marginalizing the person is in your life. Just cease using it if you think that's what's causing all your problems, instead of it actually being who you are within it. So just having one does not do that to you. That's why one of the arguments that I developed a while back was, at the time of the complaint, are you claiming that I was performing a function of government? That is a fantastic argument that they have never yet answered for anybody. They just try, well, that's nonsense. We've seen these free man arguments before. Well, that's good. Then you guys should have an answer by now then. If you've seen it for 2 years now, you'd think you'd have lots of time for an answer. Has anybody come up with one yet, other than we're terrorists? Because that kind of sounds like the last defense of a weak mind, to not answer it and just call me a terrorist. good. You've seen it before. Fantastic. What's the answer? Don't have one yet? What do you guys need? Another 40 years? Good. Call me back in 40 years when you got an answer to that. That's how you talk to the EO. You have to twist it all around on them.
Well, we've seen this all before.
Good. Excellent. Give me an answer then. Oh, you still don't have one? Well, I guess that means it must be a pretty good point to raise then, if you guys don't have an answer, because it seems you guys have an answer for everything. Okay? They can't answer that, because they have to operate on the presumption that you were, in fact, operating in their jurisdiction at the time of the complaint. Go ahead, Tony.
Okay, so we're at the top of the hour, and before we start questions, and I actually have one more thing to say regarding what you just said, but I'd like us to just change gears for a little bit. And one, let our listeners know that we have a little bit of an update for them regarding the announcement we made prior to the holiday season regarding the educational process that you and me, Dean, are working on. So I want to give you the opportunity to give our listeners a little bit of an update on that. I'm sure they've been waiting to hear something about it.
Oh, I'm actually, you know what? That's my bad. I was actually just reading a couple things on the board there, and I completely missed that last sentence and a half.
What I was saying is that regarding the project that you and I are working on that we announced briefly prior to the holidays, and some people have been waiting anxiously to hear what we're doing with that, what we're up to about it. I've had some emails sent to me, you know, what's going on with that announcement that you and Dean want to make. So I know we don't have everything ironed out yet, all the details, but I thought maybe we can give them a little bit of an update of where we're at right now.
Yeah, I think we talked about that just before the show, in fact. I think that we have a workable frame to work off now to get something together here. As much as I wanted to really talk about it tonight until we get some more details hammered out, but I think we have something really, really interesting that a lot of people are going to be very, very interested in. It's I think it's a great idea, Tony. So I think that I know I told Tony that he wanted to kind of reveal a little bit more about it tonight. I didn't because I wanted to get I wanted to be a little bit more precise when we do. But I think we're going to be able to offer something to people here that's going to be very beneficial from now on for people, because I know there's a lot of people out there that, and I hear from these people daily, they're by themselves somewhere. None of their friends, none of their families are up on this kind of stuff, or the ones that are very limited in their knowledge, and they're the ones that these people are coming to. And they're not confident enough in themselves yet. And they know they have no support network to call on or to come and help them if they screw up, or they didn't handle themselves well in court. Now they got themselves in jail, like Josh there in BC. And I've always wanted an organization in place that when they it was like a NATO, if you want to call it that, our own little NATO, as well as educating people. We're also like our own little United Nations. And the minute you attack one of our people, you've attacked all of our people, and our organization comes down on you like the hand of God. And that would give people an awful lot more confidence now when they're in court. So I think we've got a very good framework figured out that we can bring this to people and make it something really beneficial for everybody, that's really going to boost a lot of confidence in people and really get people motivated to get out there. And that's all I want to say on it. I'm not sure...
All I can tell you guys, and by you guys meaning the listeners, is that it's a very exciting thing. Me and Dean were talking about it for quite a while, I'm so excited that I know I might not sound excited on the mic, but I'm trying to contain myself here because I want to just kind of spill the beans. But Dean said just wait till we have all the T's crossed and all the I's dotted. But once you guys get wind of what we're going to be offering you, I think you're going to be just as excited as we are. all I can say right now is that those of you who want an education program, you're going to get one, and but it's going to be an education program with a twist. It's going to be some. The twist is going to be something you're going to really like. Is it okay just to tell them on the name we were going to work with, Dean? Or
yeah, but might as well.
Okay.
I don't know who came up with it, but you can give them the props on that as well. I laughed my ass off when you told me, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, well, I didn't come up with it. It was actually one of you guys, one of the listeners came up with it, and I thought it was a great idea. I can't remember who, unfortunately, so I can't give credit to someone. I can't remember your name, but if you're the one who said it, then step up and let us know. But we're going to go with FU. Yes, FU for Freedom University. But you can play on the words with that one. And you know what FU stands for. So there you go. And we'll,
yeah, if you guys, oh man, if you guys mess with me, FU is coming after you.
Yeah. So
FU
we'll,
guys.
We'll reveal more when Dean says they give us the go-ahead, and we'll reveal more about it. But I can tell you right now, it's going to be quite exciting. Okay, back to the topic at hand, Dean. All the time I was listening to you, especially the beginning portion when you were talking about, you know, how they are returning registered mail, they're changing doc files and the file numbers and all this stuff. And this one sentence kept playing over my head. It's a sentence from Star Trek, where the Borg goes up to the, you know, Star Trek office and says, "Resistance is futile." And I'm thinking here, you know, like, if they're going to play dirty no matter what, how can you win? Because it's no different than going up to the mafia and saying to them, "I know my rights. I have a right to open my business and to work and earn a living and keep my earnings. You guys have no right to come here and threaten me and extort money out of me for protection." They're not going to care what you think your rights are.
Yep.
So this is kind of the same thing. These guys, obviously, since they're doing all these dirty things, all these tricks, they obviously don't care. So how do you
And they know. That's mens reis, by the way. But that's actually good once we start teaching people lawsuits, which actually I got a couple people I want to learn from a little bit better as well. It's all learning. And then because once you start going into different jurisdictions, like, for instance, with commercial liens or you even Queen's Bench or federal court, when you can start proving mens reis, now it wasn't just a mistake maybe or the fact that the courts were operating off a procedure and you just really didn't know what was going on. Now you can prove the intent, right? They intentionally did this. That means that they know. That's mens reis. That's bad. And the other thing I love about that, Tony, and you're absolutely right, is the best thing is, in the end, we don't have to win. We just have to expose them. That is winning. Because when we expose them for what they are, and everybody sees them for what they are, that is your win. That's when it's done. It's over. It all falls apart at that point. That's when people realize that it really is just the lottery. One or two people might win, but the entire thing is just designed to screw you out of money and violate your rights. So that's that's exposing truth, right? That's when the truth is now known. We're just bringing the truth forward, making the truth very apparent for everybody to see, and that's what wins. Mens rea, yeah. The other thing, and the other quote I love from that, I think it's Arthur Schopenhauer, is with all truth passing through three phases, and that's that first it's ridiculed, second it's violently opposed, and then third it's just accepted as truth. And they used to marginalize us a few years ago, 10 years ago, they ridiculed us, and now you've probably noticed that they're really violently opposing us. We're terrorists. We're worse than Middle Eastern Muslims with Uzis, with AK-47s. Oh, we're such a threat to democracy. Those damn peaceful freedom people. Like they kind of used to demonize the beatniks and the hippies back in the 60s, right? Look out! He's got a flower. He's trying to hug you. Shoot him! Right? So it's just they're violently opposing us, and it's making them look stupid. The notion, the mere idea that one guy out there telling the truth
or and now many people out there telling the truth. I'm not talking about me for the one guy, but it doesn't matter who the one guy is. This guy who's telling the truth, why? He's a terrorist. Like, they look like fucking idiots. And everybody's starting to realize that now. Even mainstream people in my family that I talk to, they're like, look, I don't really agree with some of your views, but to come right out and call you guys terrorists? That's just silly. It's amusing. I said, well, they're like, that's them. There you go. I mean, it puts a whole new light on who they're calling terrorists in the Middle East now, too, isn't it? Why, they're not letting us build a McDonald's and a KFC in their city. Why, they're terrorists. Okay? Those are terrorists in the Muslim world. They don't want a KFC on their street corner. So that is where we're at. So the only stage left now is we're correct. Everybody understands and just sees the truth for what it is, and that's we're right, and this whole system is going to go down the shitter real quick. Yeah, that's my blurb there.
Okay.
Questions, I guess? I don't know.
We'll go to questions then. We've got 45 minutes for that. All right, so we'll start with, let me see here. I saw one regarding today's topic. I'm just trying to stick to the ones pertaining to today's topic first, and then we'll cover any of the other ones. Derek asked, what is the significance of the small, teeny-weeny numbers and letters on the back of your SIN card? As I understand it, it is your way to access the funds from your SIN account through the private side of the accounts.
I actually have no idea, but the only thing I can tell people is that the number one, let me rephrase this already. People want to get involved in UCC. There was a fellow that that I was chatting with on the forum there on our chat window there all day Sunday, and I think he started off asking about UCC questions. And again, I'm not trying to ridicule people or belittle people or make people feel stupid or not have them not want to ask questions. I'm never intending that. I just like to make sure that people remember something when I'm speaking about it. And I've spoken about this before. Okay, all these numbers that you don't know what they are on the back of a card that doesn't belong to you. The SIN card is not yours. The government can ask for it back. It's theirs. It's for internal government use. If you are using numbers that is meant for internal government use, who are you? According to operation of law, you must be the government. Otherwise, you're using things you're not supposed to be using. Okay? So quit using shit that you don't know what it does on the belief that it's some kind of new secret password of some type or something. Okay? You don't know what it is. Don't use it. Don't make assumptions. And if it's on something that is technically government property, they can ask for it back, then it's not yours to use. So you give it back, okay? Now, again, what is more important, having the correct number or having the correct status? They can find your bank account number at the bank from your name and your address. You don't need your bank account number, okay? Who you are, as opposed to what numbers you have, or what secret UCC filing you've got, or I went to a course in the States and I learned how to fill out UCC from the only guy in this universe that knows how to fill it out correctly, and it cost me $5,000 for the weekend. And man, once you fill this fucker out, you're done. You're a free man. And without filling out this UCC lien the right way, you can never be free. You're never a sovereign. You're a slave for the rest of your life until you figure out the secret handshake, the secret and dance. and chant this while you're jumping on one foot and spinning around backwards eight times. You know, that stuff's ludicrous. People have to stop it with this. It's title, okay? If you're filling out government forms, you're just helping them to prove that you are a government agent because you don't need to fill out those forms. That's their job. You tell them to do it. Okay?
All right. We're now going to a live caller. Is there anything else you want to add, Dean?
Sorry, I reflection won there. I love that comment. But Dean, it's so shiny and has so many words and numbers I don't understand. I have to use it. That's hilarious. That almost makes me think that's Dwayne from Facebook. Wicked. Okay, and correct. Correct. We just want to use this shit just to see what it does. Oh, man. Look at this thing. Oh, fuck, I got to use it. It's killing me. I got to know what it does. Okay, that's human nature, and they know that. That's why they send this shit to you. It's a trap. Okay, go ahead.
All right. We've got a person here by the name of S-Y-N-G-R-E-I-S. Your mic is live. Go ahead.
It's Syndra. What's up, Dean?
How's it going, bud?
Actually, not good.
Well, we've all been there.
Well, it's nothing that has to do with law stuff or whatever. My heart collapsed and I almost died a few days.
Oh,
so
yeah, that would do
good.
It.
Yep. but I wanted to just reinforce what Dean's saying and hopefully bring the capacity into a new light. Recently, I was brought into court for stupid charges such as having a marijuana joint in my hand. And when I went in and I asked, you know, what capacity are you guys assuming I'm operating under as? And the prosecutor just went out and flatly said that you're the trustee for this matter.
You're not the first one to tell me that recently? And bam! There you go right there.
Well, this is what I responded. I said, well, I'm unaware of what the duties are for this trustee, let alone I was even made aware that I was a trustee of this matter. Can you show me what I'm being entrusted with?
Oh, brilliant.
And the prosecutor just went silent, and the judge said, you're the trustee for the name right now. And so I said, well, how is the name represented? And then the prosecutor said something like, I object to this. This is ridiculous. And the judge responded, well, this isn't exactly ridiculous. If you thought this was ridiculous, then maybe you should stop bringing forth any accusations.
Love it.
And so I'm like trying very hard not to smile because I know exactly where this is going, right? And so I said, well, if I'm the trustee to the name, what is the name? I don't know who the name is. Are you saying that the name is me? And the judge says, well, you're here on behalf of the name. And you're here because you hold a certificate to that name. And I said, well, do you mean by the birth certificate? And the prosecutor tried to object again. But the judge said, overruled, and said, I'm allowing this to continue. He has a right to know what's going on. And I really wish I had that judge's name. I forgot about it. And there's no record for this, obviously. But so we went on, and I said, well, if I'm the trustee to this name and this name is a certificate, then who the hell is holding my dividends? He says, well, that is for the human that's for human resources and skills development. They hold whatever you may be seeking there. And so I said, okay, well, I'll deal with that on another matter. But apparently I'm a trustee to this matter. Can you give me the appropriate time for me to be up to date with the duties I'm apparently being entrusted with? He says, well, how long do you need? And I said, well, 5 years plus paid paid education to know what my duties are in the first place. And then that's just when the prosecutor said, I withdraw my claim.
There you go. That's a term. If you want me to be the trustee, I need to be certified. I need to be qualified for this.
Exactly.
So you're going to have to pay for my education, which would probably take me 4 years in university, and I'm going to need living expenses and everything paid for while I'm going to school.
Exactly. Another note I'd like to add there is after he withdrew his claim, and I said, Your Honor, you know, if the prosecutor is unaware of the roles or of the capacities that people play with, and I'm very much aware of this term or lingo that they like to use in order to discriminate me, which is called the free man, you have to look at it this way. I'm a computer programmer. Can you honestly expect me to do everything that a business administrator would do just because someone demands or assumes that I am taking that role at that time and on the payroll at that time? And the judge pretty much responded saying, that's a very good point. I'll note that for future reference.
Yep. And for anybody else out there, if they want to make that not complicated, when the Crown withdraws, you can be nice and let them withdraw so that they have no fear of withdrawing in the future. Or the minute they withdraw, you can say, excuse me, Mr. Justice, the Crown just admitted to bringing a false claim to court.
Actually, that's...
I demand remedy.
Yeah, you can demand remedy, but you can't hold the Crown in contempt for lying into the court because they only take complaints and affidavits. So the only thing that you can really do is go after the person who made the complaint.
Yep. Well, except the Crown is actually supposed to do their due diligence. They're
yes,
not supposed to bring every claim to court. They're supposed to do, they have due diligence. They are supposed to investigate and make sure that it is a legitimate claim that is being brought, a legitimate complaint. And if they bring it to court, it's because they have deemed it to be legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're withdrawing, they're admitting that it was a false claim. They knew it was a false claim.
Mm-hmm.
They were hoping that they could just trick you.
Yes.
So now you've been damaged. I demand remedy.
Well,
execute his bond and pay me.
Well,
double.
After the court concluded there, you know, when I was about to leave, the prosecutor went up to me and said, asked me to stick around.
Yeah.
So, because it wasn't done after that. And
well,
so after
not.
Everything was done, you know, court was adjourned for lunch and et cetera and shit like that. The prosecutor went up to me and says, well, how much do you really know? And he's like, well, I know enough that your entire system's a fucking scam. And he kind of just shut up after that with the exclusion of asking me of, you know, do I do seminars? And I said, I used to, but now I went on the private side. I stopped sharing
yep.
the majority that I know.
Yep. Perfect.
So, and I told them, if you pull this shit again, I'll go after you next time.
Yep. Well, like I say, give them an easy out.
Okay.
So, well, keep in touch. Let me know how that's good. Keep in touch. Let me know how that all pans out.
I told them the remedy. It's up for them to take it. So, that's it.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, Cinder. That's an amazing
right, dude.
Story you shared with us. Thanks a lot. Okay, next caller with area code 413 ending in 8286. Your name, please.
Hi, this is Jay Noon.
Hi, Jay.
Hey.
So
I know this name.
So I've been well, first off, Dina, I want to say what you're talking about does work, and I was doing it before I even knew I was doing it. I'm 33 years old. My father doesn't have a Social Security number. None of my brothers have Social Security numbers. You know, we're from Massachusetts. I got my youngest brother. My youngest two brothers don't have certificates of live birth, and neither do my nephews. And there's a whole bunch of us here in Massachusetts that do not have driver's licenses. I know about a dozen guys that have put their own license plates on cars. I have a friend, actually, this week he just won his fourth case in 2 years for travel with his own license plate on the car, and they the judge ordered the prosecutor to give him his own personal license plate back to remove his car from impound, and that the prosecution was to pay for any towing, that he's not going to pay for towing or storage, and that was just this last week. And but the one thing I did years ago, you know, when I was 18, 19 years old, I used to take the chalkboard in the courtroom And I'll write on the top of the chalkboard, God created man, earth, you know, mankind. And
yep.
I put a line down to man. And then I put another line over to the right. God created rules for man. Don't kill, don't steal. You know, as in the Ten Commandments. And then I would put a line down from man. Man created the Constitution. And I put another line down. The Constitution created the government. And then I put all these lines branching out. Government created persons, corporations, trusts, entities, etc., etc. And then government created all these rules, regulations, ordinances, and statutes for these persons, trusts, corporations, and entities. And, well, I am way up here at man. I am above all of this crap down here. I only once or twice even got that far before the judge dismissed the case. And, you know, that was back in 99 and 2000. And, you know, not having a social security number is like being born a preemie baby. I had to work real hard. I've never been an employee, but yet I've probably worked 60 hours a week my whole life, you know. And I've always made good money, and I've always just had to hustle to get along. And I've gotten good at it. And I feel I've been pretty successful. A couple of times I've bitten off more than I can chew. If anybody wants to go on YouTube and put in my name, Jay Noon, Town of Palmer, there's some pretty good videos. I had my home stolen from me about a year ago. And I'm assembling a lawsuit right now on that, and that's all for property taxes. But I have a lot of fun in court. And my little brother, Chris, who I talked about on you know, Facebook there, he's just started doing this stuff literally 4 months ago, 5 months ago, and he's been driving, you know, for 5 years, and he just got pulled over for the first time 4 months ago, and he's never ever had a license. And his first case he lost, it was a $100 fine, and the last three he's won, and he's got one more he's going that there's an arraignment on the 25th for. And the very first one he wasn't having fun with. And I got to give you a lot of credit, Dean. I said, listen to this guy, Dean Clifford. I put this MP3 file. He drives around listening to it in his truck. He put it on his iPod. He doesn't have any music on his iPod anymore. He's listening to Dean Clifford, Robert Menard, Rob Ryder, you know, Angela Starks, all the guys she has on. That's all he listens to on his iPod now, and the kid's 22 years old.
That's awesome.
And it is awesome. And he has got probably 15, 20 of his friends that showed up at the last court date that he had. You're talking about this, you know, group of people in this organization. I put something on your Facebook about the New Hampshire Free State Project. Well, here in New England, we have a very powerful group. Every time I've been going to court the past 3 or 4 years, the courtroom has been packed with people coming to watch me. I go to court probably 5 times a month for other people. I go up to Keene, New Hampshire to go to court. There's some great stuff going on in Keene, New Hampshire. In fact, I got court Wednesday in Greenfield, Massachusetts, and there's 15 or 20 guys that have called me from New Hampshire wanting to make sure I still got court Wednesday morning because they're going.
Yep.
I got 6 people right from home. My truck is full of people to go up to New Hampshire. I can't get anybody else in my truck.
And for people like watching the news and reading the newspapers, you would never know this is going on. They keep it so quiet. They don't want people to know this is going on. They don't want us to know that this is more widespread than even we realize.
Oh, absolutely. And the one judge is just retiring that I first went in front of when I was 17 years old. And I was in front of her, December I don't remember the date, December 5th or 7th or something, and everything got just dismissed based on me telling the prosecutor that I'm not a government agent, I'm not taxable, I'm not statutory, I haven't hurt anybody, and I'm going to put his witness on the stand, and these are two charges from two different towns that they combined on the same court date because it's in the same court, both driving after revoked. And the RMV will not reinstate my license unless I pay them all kinds of fines and crap. And,
excellent.
Or my right to drive, but then I don't have a license. And they put license, I've never had a Massachusetts license. And the license I had expired when I was 21, the last license, which is, you know, 12 years ago. And, you know, I didn't properly rescind it or any of that stuff. But up until they put this revoked thing on my, you know, driving record or my name or whatever, when I got pulled over, up until a year ago, when I got pulled over in any state, and I drive to Colorado once a year, I've gotten pulled over everywhere, I tell him I don't have a license. I explain to him that I'm not driving, I'm traveling. I tell him he's in violation of his oath of office. I accept his oath on the side of the road. I tell him that I need the number of the local sheriff, if it's a state trooper or a town guy, because they're the highest authority, and I'm going to have him arrested for detaining me by gunpoint. And probably only one time I actually had to call someone to come get me because he just wasn't going to let me drive away.
Yep.
And by the time, and he stood there and talked to me on the road, on the side of the road for like an hour. And this was in Ohio. I just happened to find someone who knew someone who knew someone that wasn't too far away from me. And he goes, listen, I don't care if your friend drives you to the next exit. He says, I just can't let you leave here. Now, when they start saying that to me, I learned a new phrase from Dean Clifford. Well, you're not going to be liable because I assume all liability for everything I do and every action I take. He says, I don't hold government or any government agents to be liable for me, and I want you to understand that. And that kind of gets them thinking. And that right there has gotten them to basically shake their head and just walk back to their cruiser and leave. Twice now. In other states, Massachusetts, it's a little different story because as soon as I give them, as soon as they see the plate on my truck or my name, all these, you know, red flags pop up in the whole nine yards. But I've been having a lot of fun with it. And now I got to start doing a remedy.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the only thing you guys are missing is going on the offensive and getting remedy once, and all that'll stop. But there's three things I liked so far that I heard from there. Number one was at the beginning there, that there is indeed strength and confidence in numbers. And that goes with what we were just talking about earlier, Tony. When people start having an organization or group behind them, the confidence level goes through the roof. That's proof of that, especially when you have an organized group in one state where they can all get together and start showing up for people in court. So the group is a great thing. You don't, and you just basically proved, Jay, that you don't need to rescinding the license is not mandatory to then be able to use your right, because the license is only one potential capacity. Potential. It's only a potential. A capacity you may choose to use, but you're not right now. You may choose to never use it. People are hung up on this getting rid of this kind of stuff when you don't need to. I just don't use it. Yeah, see that old car in the backyard there? I've had that for 20 years. I never drive it once. Oh, and then the last point that was just made there about the liability. I'm liable in this matter. I had those cops in BC try to tell me that they were liable for my actions. I said, no, you're not. I said, I'm liable for my own actions. I am fully liable. They try to pull that shit on you because he who is liable, he who assumes all liability is in control, right? So liability, liability, liability. No, I'll accept all liability. Then I'm in control because I'm the one liable. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jay. And if you don't mind, do me a favor, press 1 again to lower your hand. That'll be great. Next caller, area code 321, ending in 1443. Your name, please. And please make your question ask your question and make it short and precise and to the point. Thank you.
Will do. This is Phil Ward. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
We're doing great, Phil. Go ahead.
Good. Hey, I've got a real quick question, and I'll try to leave out any particulars so I can just get your general impression of it. But if a guy were to get a judgment against him in a court, in a civil matter, like a credit card, I was going to do an accept it for value on it, would I turn those papers directly back to the court?
Well, the court's the bank, right?
Right.
So that's where the deposit is going to get made. Maybe research into that to make sure that you understand fully what acceptor for value means, because it's you can do that to a court order. Go ahead.
I have done a lot of research on the acceptor for value, and something that I fail to understand is that if I'm doing a court, I know how you can do things through the IRS and that kind of thing through Covington and all that, but what I'm with this in particular, honestly, we just got kind of duped in the case, and we didn't even know that we were supposed to be going there until it was too late and whatever. So we got the judgment against us. It showed up in the mail, and I just basically am trying to get clarification as to that I can go in and simply accept it for value and turn it into the clerk of court at the courthouse that it was issued from.
Okay. There's one thing, and I shouldn't even – there is one thing in particular I could say to do with that, but I'm actually not allowed to talk about that. AFV, yes. I would say it's not quite properly applied in that matter. My understanding of AFV is that when a claim is brought against you, when you accept it for value, you've basically captured all the equity in that instrument. And now the other party has to prove up their claim, or you own all the value in that claim, and they now owe that all to you. So the difference with this is that there's already a judgment. Now, if you don't want to pay it yourself, you're supposed to be able to just pay things with your signature, which means you don't need the AFV. And what is the government holding of yours that that might be of note when it comes to paying debts? Let me ask you that.
Okay.
Are you the trustee?
Correct. So they're going to be holding a trust fund, but.
Well, I wouldn't say they're necessarily even holding a trust fund, but it depends on who the trustee of the matter is. You may want them to settle the debt. You did your best fighting it. No, you didn't win. Okay. Well, I guess the trust better pay for this.
Okay. So I can
you may want to think. You may want to think about that.
I can just simply order it to be done then.
Yep, you probably wouldn't want to do that through the courthouse, though. You may want to send it someplace that is more. I'm trying to think of a better word for this without saying it in the wrong way. More equipped to
usually
handle that
deals.
Kind of thing.
Yeah,
usually deals
with tax
yes.
payments and things like that.
Yes. Yes, accountants. Okay. You want to send it to the accountants for the entire matter to get settled, and that would make you think that you're led to then deal with the IRS, but you got to remember the IRS is actually they're not the middleman. They're somebody that you authorize to go deal with the middleman. You can go straight to the middleman yourself. The IRS is only another intermediary. Right, your securities never leave where they were deposited. You're just always assigning new people to be able to go in and deal with them.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
So think about that
for
a little bit. I think it might be beyond the AFV point because again, that's I accept it. Basically AFV is almost as far as I understand. I'm gonna check with that. I got somebody who's been studying that for a while now that I meant to get back to just to see what they have come up with on the AFV thing. But my understanding, as it still stands right now, is, and according to the definition on the Law Society website, is that when somebody presents a claim to you, and within 30 days, you have to AFV it and then return a copy to them. And then that lets them know, okay, I accept this upon proof of claim. It's a conditional acceptance. So I'm not sure how that would really work in a court order scenario. It's more likely you actually just want that paid now. Either that or you got to appeal it. So if you want it paid, then send it to the people that are paying the bills for the trust.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, great. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks a lot,
all right, thanks
Phil.
A lot.
Do me a favor, Phil, and press 1 again to lower your hand. It'll be great. Thanks. All right. Next question is from the Facebook fan page. And it's, I can't even say this person's name, so I'm not even going to attempt it. If you have received a summons for a court case and for some reason, for example, the post was late due to Christmas, leaving you only a few days before court, meaning you have no time to send the prosecutor an affidavit asking them to prove you work for them. Say you get something from the court saying they ruled in your absence that you are guilty and then send debt collectors for a fine, for instance. Could you then send the court that is making the ruling an affidavit asking them to prove you work for them or agree, i.e., show me the contract, or should you still send the said affidavit to the prosecuting party, the one that brought the case to the court, or is there something more effective or appropriate to do?
Oh boy, that's a lot of what ifs and can I's. You can do any of that. There's all sorts of things you can do. You can send all sorts of stuff to the courts. What's going to be effective? I'm not sure what the matter's about. I'm going to hypothecate here a little bit now. I let the dog out of my office because she's whining for some reason here. Hang on one sec. So I'm thinking that, number one, there's no reason to not ever contact the court and say, hey, well, you missed a hearing, number one. You should have sent in a notice if there was a hearing that you weren't coming to the hearing, why you weren't coming to the hearing. You can fax it in, you can phone in, or you can send the court something saying, look, I contacted the Crown. I sent it by regular mail. Apparently they didn't get it. This matter still needs to be heard or it depends on how you want to deal with it. I don't know if this is a criminal charge or just a fine. It depends on if you were there for previous hearings and this was another hearing, which means you've already agreed to be the surety, which means now that debt is binding on you, or if it was just a default conviction, you never showed up for court ever once in the first place. And if that's the case, then who gives a shit? What would make them believe that you're the surety? Just the fact you didn't show up clearly demonstrates that you didn't agree to be the surety on this. That could be a response. Send it back, say, excuse me, I never agreed to be the surety on this. Take this and shove it up your ass. There's a number of different ways to handle that, and I would suggest just listening to all the audios, I guess, maybe, and picking an avenue depending on what the debt is over. So it's almost the best way I can answer that without knowing really anything else. There's a lot of what-ifs and can I do this in there.
Okay. Next question is from Lee Edgley from Ireland. He says, would you ask Dean, are the police offering unilateral contracts at the point of contact? And just to confuse them, can you say that you are sovereign of the Republic and not sovereign of the democracy? I would just like to hear if Dean really believes that self-governing people can really coexist with government when not enough people know their inherent rights. I'd like to believe we can, but I think government would shrink dramatically.
That would be a fantastic thing if government shrank dramatically back to what they were supposed to be. Yes, sovereign people can exist side by side with government because sovereign people created government for a specific purpose. They just are no longer doing that purpose. I don't think you could claim to be a sovereign of the democracy. I've never heard of that. I don't think that's even a possibility. I mean, democracy by its very definition is the will of the people, mob rule. I don't think you could be a sovereign in that system. It just doesn't seem like it would even be possible. Sovereign person on the land, sovereign man on the land, obviously that's still one of the best statuses to be, if you want to call it that. Yeah, I used to really despise the term sovereign citizen because it's like, well, sovereign and citizen just don't go hand in hand. But then it turned out that, again, due to my ignorance, I was only thinking about the one type of citizen, which is a citizen of a democracy, which that's idiotic. You can't be a sovereign citizen of a democracy. Sovereign citizen of a republic, well, that's exactly what the sovereigns are. They're the sovereigns who only abide by the law of the land, which means they're all equal, they all have unalienable rights, it's an applicable term. I actually don't mind that now, as long as you qualify the word citizen properly. So I hope that kind of answered all of them.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it. Now, this gentleman also says, I do not, he wants to, he asks if he can put out his URL to his website. So there it is, for those of you who wish. He says he does free talks himself every 3 to 4 weeks in Ireland. And he also commends us on doing so well spreading the word. Spreading the word. Thank you, Lee. Okay, next question from Bruce. Let's see. Okay, I'm not going to go into that one right now. It's a bit of a long question, so I'm going to go to the next one. To establish your capacity in court, how about this? As everyone in the court is acting for my legal person today, and I am not, that right there is enough to tell me that I can only be here as a beneficiary. All the court employees are in their official capacity and are therefore taking a salary from the state. That automatically makes them the trustees, so they can't be the beneficiaries, still studying. So he's one. I guess he's asking for you to say yes or no on that.
I would say that's a valid argument if you got that out in the open and just start. There's always ways you can phrase that. Say it's my understanding that when you're in court, right? So never operate off of your own presumptions and never go off of mine. If you want to know for sure, walk into court and just say, "Look, it's my understanding that you're all on the government payroll." And you're all operating as agents of the legal person right now. Is that correct? And if it's incorrect, how is it incorrect? And who exactly are you then? Because I'm not taking part in anything until I know precisely who you people are and in what capacity you're here. Otherwise, why would I ever take part in what's going on here? As soon as you start doing that, that's enough for them to want to dismiss right away or withdraw. They do not want to get into that. So, again, don't operate off your own presumptions. Don't operate off mine. Get clarity right in the courtroom.
Okay.
Oh, and if they try to say, well, Mr. So-and-so, and they start wanting to talk about procedure, say, look, I don't care about you. I don't consent to your procedure. I'm not bound by your procedure. I asked a question. I expect it to be answered unless there's something you guys are trying to hide. Are you trying to hide something? Are you guys trying to be all secretive and elusive here? Is there something you guys don't want to talk about, or is this a place where the truth is talked about and there are no secrets? That really makes them mad. I'll answer sans remorse right now. No, Dean does not enjoy the halfling's leaf. In fact, Dean has actually never enjoyed the halfling's leaf. Dean's been high on life since he was born. Okay, next.
Okay, Dean, we're down to 7 minutes, and I was reading actually off the email, so I was on a different screen. When I switched back to the studio, all of a sudden I noticed my switchboard lit up here with people want to ask questions. So do you want to go overtime or what?
Yeah, I'm eating a little bit of pasta right now that Darren cooked for me, so yeah, I'm set. I'm good.
Okay, good. Then our first, Phil, you haven't lowered your hand yet. Can you please press 1 on your dial pad because you're still in the queue here for questions? Okay, our next caller is area code 780 ending 1497. Your name, please.
Hi, how's it going?
Your name, please.
Hi, how's it going?
We're doing fine. Your name, please.
My name's Thomas here. I'm calling from Edmonton, Alberta. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad yourself.
Go ahead with your question.
Very good, very good. I just love what you guys are doing with the show. I just kind of wanted to go over this question. In a situation of an already existing business, what are the appropriate steps to regain control of the corporation after the SIN number was officially used to open the corporation?
Again, I think it's your standing with regards to that account. If the account is a pass-through account between accounts payable and accounts receivable, now it depends on which one you want to be in and whether or not you can back up your claim. Right?
Yeah,
if a mistake has been made in the past, what can we do with mistakes?
All right, we got to clear them up, right?
Mistakes can always be corrected, can they not?
Yes, yes.
In fact, is that not the only way that you can arrive at the proper conclusion?
Very true.
That's the only possible way to get to the truth is to correct the mistakes. So it's required by law.
Who would you talk to in that in regards to that? Like, where would you even start?
Where was the mistake made?
Well, in the registration of the business, right? When I went to go register the business, I was told this is what I have to do: go to this place, fill out the form, give the form. They give you the certificate of corporation. Now,
yep.
When I signed up, they also did ask for that social insurance number. Now, I want to go back and I want to take that thing off so I can proceed with doing whatever I need to do with that, right?
You should be able to do that. I would follow the steps backwards then. And that's where I like the how it was done, so it shall be undone approach, going back to the Hammurabi code there. I'll go back to Egypt for that one. However you got yourself into the mess, just start, literally, once you realize you're lost in the forest, just start walking backwards on your footprints to where you think the mistake might have been made, right? Now,
right,
I'm sure you probably
right.
will figure it out pretty quick, though. It's not that hard. And in the end, anyways, again, I don't consider it to be a bad thing. It all depends on
okay.
who you are within it.
Right, right.
Okay,
another
thank you very
question
much.
Here I have, so now, do you have to provide a government-issued driver's license when you are the owner of the tow truck company making money off a public road?
Well, I'm going to say no to that, and this is the reason why. Number one, gasoline taxes maintain the roadways.
Right.
Okay, so every time you fill up, all that tax money you're paying, well, actually, 10% of it goes to the roads. The other 90% actually gets stolen or winds up in somebody else's pocket. But you're already
right.
paying for the roads.
Right.
You have every right to make money off the roadways, off the road system.
Right on.
If you're performing a function, if you're acting under a policy or program of the government, now here's a problem. If you're towing people, say, because the RCMP have requested that they be towed because of a violation of some act or statute, like they've done with one of my trucks in the past, you are now, yes and no, that's actually a sticky spot. I could say you're not, because you're actually just working as an independent contractor for the RCMP. So
right.
No, they're performing the function of government. You are not. But make sure that's clear in your contract, I guess. Play
right.
with it, man. Let me know how that goes. I would have to say no, though. Insurance-wise, if it's a corporation, that's a tough one. Unless you bond up all your vehicles under your own private bond, then you won't need insurance. But if you're using if your trucks are registered to a corporation, that might be you might have to put plates on. Because that corporation will be registered in the province. So if it was just a private sole proprietor, one tow truck or maybe two tow trucks, you didn't incorporate, I would say you could get away with using your own plates. But because you're using now a corporation that's created by one of the corporate acts of the province, you probably don't want to try to get away from that. I'm thinking you're going to wind up having to get insurance plates. That's an excellent thing for you to chase down, because it's not something I've had to come across, actually. So,
all right. Thanks a lot for your question.
Yeah.
Please press
driver's
one.
License, no. You still don't need one of those, by the way. Just make sure you're signing your insurance documents properly. All rights reserved, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
And then have a contract with your corporation that says you don't need one.
Okay. Just want to remind our listeners, we're down to a minute and a half. So if you wish to continue with the show, you need to call in at 646-478-5728. Once the minute and a half are up, the stream will stop. You cannot call. You won't be able to call in after that, so you must do that now or you won't be able to do it later. Okay. The gentleman from Edmonton, can you please press 1 to lower your hand? Thank you. Okay, next caller, area code 212, ending in 7178. Please give us your name, and please limit it to 2 questions only. We have 6 callers after you waiting.
Hi, I'm Val.
Hi, Val.
Bud. Hey, Dean. Great work. Hey, Tony. I have a question about, new things, rather, about passports. And the thing is, let's say in the country X where I'm from, of course there's a statute requiring you to acquire a passport with all the full biometrics in it. which myself, of course, sounds kind of, you know, the biometrics and all, fingerprinting. And it feels kind of wrong in a sense that feels like making me criminal before I actually become one, so to speak, you know. So the question is, what's your take on passports and basically requirements to acquire one? And, of course, requirements, it all boils down to travel, I suppose.
Yeah. This is where I start to get to my reasonable side, where I think it's reasonable when people are traveling internationally that there should be a way to monitor that and to know who people are. Because if you did injure somebody, they want to know that they can go collect money for damages or find you if you really are a gunman that's going to commit some atrocity somewhere in another part of the world. So I'm very okay with that, but I'm not okay with obviously what you're talking about there with all the biometrics now and everything that all these government employees must have and all that kind of horseshit, right? A picture, a couple people that know you, I find that to be reasonable. I'm okay with that. Any reasonable person would be. I think that's where you're starting to get into the proper type of passport. So I think we even spoke about that in a different show. I have yet to go do that myself. I just haven't had time. Go and getting a proper passport. And there's absolutely not a chance in hell that when you start getting into diplomatic passports and other types of passports that you will have to be burdened with any of that kind of horse shit.
Right? And then continuing, if I may, the thing is, like, would that consider, well, I understand reasoning and all, but would that be considered also like as an invisible contract? Because in a passport, it also says that there's a property of the state and so on and so forth. So accepting basically passing the law, making me to accept the property, which is not my own.
Yep.
Sort of.
Now, no, and I agree with you. It does limit you. It does diminish you a bit. That's why I also, again, like if you want to, it all comes down to your desired level of harassment and or mobility. I'm free to go wherever I want in Canada. If I want to start traveling abroad to other people's countries, they do have certain requirements, right? Unfortunately, that's just a reality. I can't go to Colombia in South America, walk across their border with no ID of any kind, and when the border guards try to stop me, say, fuck you, I'm a child of God, this planet's mine, I can go wherever I want. Okay. Biblically speaking, you're probably correct. That's not going to stop them from shooting you. They will kill you. So this is where our reason has to start kicking in. Okay. Although I may believe I have the right to go down to Colombia and go wherever I want in the country of Colombia, the Colombian government and the people at the border are going to have a different idea about that. So... And I also know that, like, a lot of the countries, the better countries in the world, the live birth record is all you should need to travel to any of these countries. But then the problem is, because you're not relying on any international treaties that already exist between these governments, because you want to kind of go it on your own now, you have to go through the due diligence of contacting the country or the nation that you're going to be traveling to, saying, here's my documentation. Here's a photo of me. Here's a like notarized photo identification. If you're from the state, it's got an apostille on it, whatever. I plan on traveling to your country. I trust this is acceptable. I'm leaving on this date. I'm coming back on this date. If there's any problems, please get back to me. Let me know if there's anything else you wish me to blah, 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 blah. You have to now go and do all that. Because if you don't want to abide by the rules the government has set down, and the government's the one that went and got all those treaties in place, then you have to go and do that kind of legwork yourself. So have some fun with it. I mean, absolutely, that sounds like a lot of fun. That's my stance on all that.
Okay, thanks, Val, for your questions. Please press 1 to lower your hand. Next caller, area code 786. Ending in 7702. Your name, please.
Yes, Todd.
Hello, Todd. Go ahead with your questions. Please keep them down to 2.
Okay. Dean, I heard you reference things like the Criminal Code of Canada and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. My question is, since I'm from the United States, what equivalents to those things like would you have for me, like for anybody in the United States?
Lovely question. I just ranted about this the other day down in the United States. A lot of Americans hold up the Constitution as the principal source of their rights, when the Constitution itself tells you it is not the source of your rights. It tells you right in the Constitution, it simply restates what is already there. Okay? So if you want to reference something for your rights, you just want to talk about simple, naturally existing, unalienable rights. The Founding Fathers talked about that. They said, look, it's pretty much universally agreed now that there's a creator and that we're all born with unalienable rights. There's no court in this world that could even attempt to possibly say it's anything but that. So, again, you don't derive your rights from any document. The Constitution is a restriction on government, right? You don't get the right to own a gun from, the Second Amendment. That doesn't give you that right, okay? It tells the government that that right is inviolate. You cannot violate that right. It's already existing, and there's nothing you can do to take that away. This individual is a citizen, and that unalienable right comes into the realm of citizenship with him. You cannot take that away. You probably heard in other shows, if you've been listening, that the problem is you guys aren't in the Constitutional Republic anymore. You're all floating around in the democracy, demanding things that are protected in the Republic. So these are the kind of things you want to bring up in the courtroom. Not a specific document, because, again, any document that has your rights enshrined on it is just something that's restating what is already generally accepted to be existing. Does that help?
Yes, it does. And let me just throw this in there as my second question and just be gone. All right, this just came up in my head. All right, so how much more difficult would it be to go abroad and, let's say, try and deed tax, let's say if you buy some land abroad, and avoid paying property taxes in a country that you're not from?
To be honest with you, I would say that it shouldn't be very hard. I would love to try that sometime, because that should just be a natural right that doesn't come with citizenship, is land ownership and the right to not have to pay any taxes on that land. I don't think you have a right, again, to the resources, though. Like, if you wanted to start, like a forestry business on a chunk of land that you bought or whatnot commercially, you'd still have to pay royalties because that's not your birthright. I could be wrong on that, to be honest with you. I probably would be of the position that I don't want Canada to become filled with a bunch of people from the four corners of the world not paying any taxes here at all, right? Because it's like, well, to me it's kind of like, well, that's kind of my birthright, guys.
Yeah, so, fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm up in the air on that one, you know. Like I say, I'm a reasonable man, and if somebody brought me a reasonable argument as to why they should have to pay property taxes on a piece of land, even if, because they're a foreigner, I'd probably listen to it. I don't think there's any absolute law on that. I think that's one of those reasonable men sit down and discuss those kind of things type deal.
Okay.
I don't know. Let me know how it goes. If you go make that argument, if you go buy land in like Belize or something like that, and you tell the Belizean government, piss off, I'm a man, I don't have to pay any taxes, and it turns out to work, shit, I want to be the first person you email to let me know.
All right. Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Tony. You guys.
All right.
Thanks, Todd. Please press 1 to lower your hand. Thank you. Okay, next caller, area code 703, ending in 7534. Your name, please.
It's Tara. How are you?
Did you say Tara?
Very good.
Yeah. Okay, Tara, go ahead.
I just wanted to let Dean know that on KMA Club, After Hours Club, I guess two nights ago, Carl was talking you up.
Awesome.
Well, he's a piece of work, I'll tell you what.
That's awesome.
But
well, hopefully people are learning.
Yeah. But the first half of that show, they were talking about a new thing that I hadn't heard about regarding mortgages and property tax. apparently our mortgage, the title companies that we pay to take care of this, aren't doing it correctly, and they're not executing it correctly, and so it's being recorded as a corporation versus private property, and the excise tax that the state holds on us is a tax on the negotiable instrument.
I've heard all that before.
Oh,
and
okay.
I think it's more simple than that.
Really, that seems awfully simple.
Yeah, that is awfully simple. But again, that's all based
that's
on your ability
to
prove.
That's getting the state off your back, though. No, you just have to go down and do a correction.
Yes, that's true, too. But that's also based on your ability to be able to prove your belief that they have done something incorrect on their end.
Well,
so,
I mean, apparently the deed is actually is missing an acknowledgement and execution that it needs.
Oh, it's very likely, but everybody
and,
does
and,
it to screw you. So.
Right, right. But I mean, if you just do an amendment or a correction on your deed, evidently, I mean, this happened like a week ago. This is from, well, secondhand by me, firsthand by the man that was talking about it, said that within a week of filing and going and paying the, doing the correction, and then the recorder told him to go down to a different office and pay the excise tax, and then within a week he had the liens off of his property.
Nice. What, like IRS liens?
No, the state lien, the tax lien on it from the state.
Oh, okay. Oh,
that's
for property
how they're
tax.
Holding, they're well, yeah, but the actual the base tax that they're holding over us on the property is not the land. It's the tax on the negotiable instrument.
It's a tax on title.
Mm-mm. It's a tax on the note.
Oh, very likely, but you may want to let them know that note was non-taxable. That could be a problem also. My understanding on that could very well be.
Well, I mean, this is California, too, and this is in the base. This isn't like the
yeah.
Root law.
Very different system down there, so who knows?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's based in the same thing, though.
Yeah, if it works, great.
Well, I mean,
my only
so
problem with that is I wouldn't
want
to have to pay a dime to have taxes removed, tax liens removed from my property that aren't supposed to be there in the first place.
This is only if you use a note to purchase your property. If it's between private parties, it doesn't apply.
Yep, that makes sense to me.
Okay, Tara, we need to move
mm-hmm.
on.
Okay.
Yep, I like it.
That's all I had to say. And also on the forum, I posted a book. It's called The History of the Law of Real Property. From 1887, and it's really good. It clears a lot
that.
Of stuff up.
Did you email that at all?
I put it on your Skype.
Yes. Okay. I remember seeing that today, actually, and I was like, oh shit, I got to go back and make sure I download that.
Oh, and I also posted you a talk show from American Reconstruction. Michael James Anthony was on there on the 19th. Really interesting information.
Okay. Oh, there's so many people coming out now with fantastic information. It's a
well,
very exciting
guy,
time.
Well, this guy is not on that often. I mean,
yeah.
He's hard to find, and he really knows what he's talking about.
Most people, that's what happens to them. As soon as they know what they're talking about, they tend to phase out.
Right.
Okay,
well,
guys.
Those are the ones I want to find.
Yep. All
okay, right. Well, I'm next person on. Nice talking to you.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Tara, for coming on, asking me questions. Please press 1 on your dial pad. Thank you. Okay, next caller, area code 306, ending in 9879. Your name, please.
Paul.
Paul, go ahead.
Question for Dean. On the social insurance number, I want to amend it, not to get rid of it. And how would I go about doing it? Like the first four put me into the tax law, but other is the only one that removes me from being a citizen and a resident. Is that the one you normally best one you would amend with?
it seems to me that I'd be the only one that I would really want to mess with would be the resident part. And my only explanation for that is, and I think that's probably because you mentioned me heard that before maybe on a previous show, about the whole resident problem.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody actually just sent me a couple of messages there. I got a couple of messages in a couple of days from people saying, I've looked up every definition of resident, and not one of them that I found anywhere says anything to do with an office or an officer or whatever. I don't know where the hell you're getting your information from, and blah, 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 blah. And so the groundbreaking research they must have done must have been just amazing, because I just, as soon as I read that email, I looked over and I went, whoa, okay, well, hang on a sec here. I just happened to have my Black's Fifth sitting right beside me where it normally is. And I opened up to R, which I'm doing as we speak. And I said, okay, that's the first book I've ever mentioned. So went to Resident here. I had this open up until like yesterday, CQRS. Rescue Resident. So they could not find anything, anywhere, with relation to the word resident, meaning an officer of any kind, or an agent. That's what it was, an agent or officer. So if you read through the definition of resident, you get to the very bottom of the word resident. And then the next word below resident is resident agent. And a resident agent is a, by definition, person in a jurisdiction authorized to accept service of process for another, especially a corporation. So in the vast amount of research that people are doing, they're not reading the next definition of resident.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me says, okay, well, resident agent. So, gee, maybe like everything else that the courts are doing, they're leaving little valuable pieces of information out. Like when they get you to check off the resident box, their definition of resident is what Blacks calls a resident agent, a person in a jurisdiction authorized to accept service of process for another, especially a corporation. Does that sound like what they're doing to you when they send you paperwork in the all caps name, mm-hmm. like they're serving you process for a corporation?
Exactly.
There you go. Okay, so that didn't take much research. I just had to open up my Black's Law Dictionary.
I just looked under the Revenue Canada definitions, and everything was you have to pay taxes.
There you go. they're even worse at being elusive on definition. They don't even define resident, I don't think.
No, they don't. And the thing is, they don't have other on their listings either. And other is you remove yourself from taxes, and you remove yourself from being a citizen and a resident. And you just exist, and you have health care.
There you go. Yep, just
so
exist then. Some people may want to stick around and be residents. I don't think, citizens, the proper type of citizen. Not in the democracy, by the way. Canada's in the same boat. We have a democracy, and we have a commonwealth. And a commonwealth is a republic. A republic is a commonwealth. They're the same thing. Our republic, our commonwealth, is not a democracy. It was never created a democracy. If you are a citizen of the democracy, a voting citizen of the democracy, you are a foreign agent, whether you like it or not, whether you say you're a resident or not. Qualify which citizen you are, because they're assuming and presuming the one that's going to benefit them. Or just don't be any.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'll just be other, because then I don't have to worry about it all. But I wanted to amend this, so I don't have to worry about the income tax or try to doing stages. I'm a lot of information. I don't want to screw up, but I wanted to get Revenue Canada off my back. But
yeah,
I wanted
just out.
So would I do other? Is that the one you pick then?
Well, there's other. There's also non-resident alien, I believe.
There's only four that they have on this form.
Okay.
Five, including another. You got the Canadian citizen, registered Indian, permanent or temporary resident.
They don't have non-resident alien?
They don't have non-resident on it.
No, then I would go other. Absolutely.
Okay. Excellent.
Perfect.
That's what I've been searching for, but there's nothing on the internet on that one.
Thank you
Lovely.
Very much, Paul.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You have a good night. Bye.
All right, have a good night.
Okay, next caller, area code 416, ending in 8724. Your name, please.
Chad.
Chad, go ahead.
This is the best show yet, guys. Thanks a lot for all your hard work.
You're
welcome. Thank you for the motivation.
Well, it's going to be a hell of a year, guys. I really appreciate your hard work. Dean, I feel unclear about something here. And sometimes when you're talking, it sounds as though it sounds like to me you feel that the system can be saved in Canada. And sometimes it feels like you're saying that it's beyond repair and you want to abandon it. And I don't mean to put words in your mouth. This is just the impression I get.
I would say your impressions are correct so far.
Both of them, right?
Some weeks I'm hopeful that we can do something about this, and other weeks I'm not very hopeful at all. So I'm always back and forth a little bit. But there's one thing I do know is that I think the answer always has been along a middle path somewhere. Where
don't forget that Dean's also human.
What's that?
I said don't forget that Dean's also human.
Yeah,
probably.
Contrary to popular beliefs, he's not God just yet.
Yeah, it turns out I'm fallible, quite fallible, in fact. I think the system should be regulated and diminished to what it was supposed to be, which is a very minor part of our lives, where interactions with the government are rare and for purposes that you desire, not the other way around right now. So the system as we know it, no, it cannot be saved because it's not the proper system. This is not even remotely close to the way things are supposed to be. So that probably is why I kind of seem like I float back and forth in that idea. I don't know. Is that kind of answering it?
It does, actually, and I feel the same way. It's a bit of a roller coaster. Sometimes I feel like it's beyond repair, and sometimes I think, well, we're in a pretty decent system here. Maybe it is worth salvaging and repairing.
Yeah, I think if we went back to its basic functions, to the source code, if you want to call it that, and got rid of all the apps, that's actually a fantastic way of explaining it. I just kind of came up with that right now. But it seems to me that the reason I like my BlackBerry is I keep it very basic. It performs a specific function, and I put no apps on it. I fucking hate apps. I've seen people's phones that are loaded with apps, and the thing is just fucking useless. You don't even want to look at it because every time you touch a button, a billion fucking things happen and lights are flashing and you're like, oh my God, I don't even want to use that thing. It's fucked. That's what government is right now. It's a BlackBerry with 8 billion apps that nobody wants. We need to get rid of all those apps, go right back to source code. Your function is this. You're going to record my property. That's it. Don't fucking talk to me again. Don't send me any offers. Don't send me a tax bill. Don't send me some kind of a fucking code violation, a summons, a ticket, nothing. Record this and fuck off. You'll hear from me again when I need something else. That's what government is supposed to be.
So, sorry to be taking up so much time, guys.
It's all good.
Time for one more question?
Yeah,
so
go ahead.
Would an approach be to, say, get a third-party voluntary citizen audit of what the government's been doing? Would that be a starting point? Or do we even have the right to do that, since it's a foreign corporation that we're not paid by?
Oh.
Do I have a right to go to McDonald's and demand change within McDonald's if I'm only an employee?
I'm going to say absolutely to that, and here's the difference. Why? Because you're not coming at them as an employee. You're coming at them in the proper capacity as a shareholder. When you start demanding accountability. And if you get enough people together, like that's why they have shareholders meetings, right? You get enough shareholders together and you start demanding some accountability, then some fireworks start to happen. And that would go right part in parcel and would fit lovely into exactly what Tony and I are talking about that we're going to start launching here pretty soon. Because that's exactly what we need in this country is a unified block of shareholders that have had enough, and it's time to delete every app and get some accountability, and we have that authority.
You beat me to it. I was just going to say that.
Lovely.
I love it.
Yep,
okay,
in fact, well, no, we'll talk about that another time. All right,
thanks, guys.
Hope that helped, bud.
I'll be the first member of FU University given the chance.
Awesome.
Okay, great, Chad. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Okay, Syndra is back. Syndra, I guess you have another question to ask. Go ahead. Mic was live.
Yes, I was, Dean, I just wanted to share a tidbit of information with you, and you probably would find this extremely useful. I was talking to the Canadian elections people, or the one that deals with the elections, and I went through their act, and I found out that only people who is the governed has the right to vote. So I called them, and I asked them, if I remove my name from the voters list, does that mean I'm part of the government or have a say in the government? And they said, no, not really, because if you're removing yourself, then you can't vote. And if you can't vote, you can't take part in the active government process. And I said, so if I don't want to be part of the government process, then I have no right to say anything in its matters, right? And he says, well, not exactly. It doesn't work exactly that way. Certain things are still entitled to you. And I say, okay, so certain things are entitled to me regardless if I want to actively participate, right? And they agreed. And I said, well, what happens if I don't want to participate anymore? What happens if I don't want to deal with anything about the government anymore? What happens if I don't want to be subjected to the will of parliament or to the will of people? And he kind of fell a little bit silent. And I said, so I want to remove my name from the voters list, and I don't want nothing to do with this government. And I want you to send me something in paper or in writing that states that my name has been removed from the voters list. So they sent me something in the mail confirming that I removed my name from the voters list. So I brought that to the member of the parliament, right? You know, because you have your MPs and your MPPs. And I brought it to us and I said, look, I removed my name from the name of the parliament, but don't think that this can erase the obligation for you to not give me what's rightfully mine, such as an entitlement. He says,
what
so what
I'm
are you trying to
exactly?
And so he says, so what are you trying to achieve? And I said, I don't want to do your bullshit anymore. I don't want to deal with your acts or your bylaws to the point where I can't even fucking remember. You honestly expect me to remember 268,000 acts, statutes, and bylaws, and you expect me to follow every single one of them? He says, well, no, you don't have to follow all of them, just in a specific capacity. And I said, well, until you better train your police officers to not be fucking idiots, I'm rescinding all my consent to be governed. He says, I'll note it in the record.
I'm done.
So
I'm
out. Walked out. So I walked out. And then this happened about a month ago, and I have never been harassed again. I actually, you know, like with the exclusion that they tried to get me on marijuana.
I guess maybe that'll be a celebratory point, but
yeah, and you know, the only exception was that they tried to get me on marijuana, and I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere, but. It's just the fact that I withdrew my consent because I don't want to deal with these fucking retarded cops. And the fact that the MP actually agreed to me that the cops aren't exactly the smartest people on the earth and they've been poorly educated on the law, you know, it goes to show something that, you know, it's Canada's been overrun by retards.
Or the admission that you don't have to obey every act and statute, just certain ones when they're being applied in a certain way. But
yeah.
Those right there, they're not laws in the first place then. I don't have to obey everything. It's all based on contract.
Exactly.
No, it's all getting exposed for what it is.
And I went one step further, and I said, the corporation of Canada, or the Canada as a government entity, is not in the position to bring forth any criminal acts. If I truly created, or if I truly committed an act of heinous crime, then it is up to the people to prosecute me. A fiction cannot prosecute me. And he says, I agree with you 100%, but I can't do anything about it.
That's not the first time that I've heard that statement from somebody in the government. We understand that, but there's nothing we can do about it.
Exactly.
I've heard that a few times now. They know. Some of them know. So
I just wanted to share that tidbit of information to encourage people that, yes, there is hope. And it's a lot easier than what people like to think. You don't have to go and jump through loops or shit like that. You can just get it straight to the basics. And you can get a lot of shit done.
The clearest indicator that you remove consent is to remove yourself from the voting registry.
Exactly. That is a very powerful way, because that shows you no longer wish to be governed. You no longer wish to subject yourself to the will of your leaders.
That's exactly why I told people that if they want out, go and remove yourself from the voting registry, and then say, look, I've removed my consent to be governed. I want nothing to do with the people no more. And that's exactly it right there.
As a final note, before I'm being let off there, as a final note, people called me an anarchist, right? And I looked it up on what they were looking for. And I said, and I went back to the guy because, he was someone that I talked to regularly. And I said, if I'm an anarchist, then God damn it, I am guilty, because I don't like the idea of having masters. An anarchist is one who does not follow the laws of their masters. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay.
Closed the scene.
Thanks again,
right,
Sandra.
Yeah, no problem. Joe.
How are you?
Okay, this will be the last question and or comment. It's Tara again. Okay, and then we're going to close it off after this. So, Tara, you're the last one. Please try to keep it short.
My question is... Hi, it's not a question. I just wanted, I posted on your Skype, Dean, I posted a link to an ABC News article that said U.S. court okays barring a high IQ for cops.
Sorry, say it again?
go back and look at my Skype account where I posted it. It says http://ABC News. Open that and look at it. This just happened.
Oh, shit, I'm going to have to go and find it now. There's about a billion
different... Yeah, Sandra talking about how stupid the cops are. It's because they want them to be. This guy tried to sue for discrimination because they wouldn't give him a job because he was too smart.
There's no question. I've spoken about that before with people. They need intentionally dumb people, because anybody that they hired that's smart would know that what they're doing is against the law. They would know that. I mean, you could see it in the eyes of those cops in BC in the audio I'm going to release soon, that they were like, they realized it. I said, you guys are the criminals here. You realize that. You're actually committing a crime right now.
This is in the paper.
They know this. They intentionally hire, not only that, actually, we knew about this 10 years ago. If you really want to hear something scary, it's required that all police take psychological evaluations before they get hired.
Right.
And the ones that are deemed to be of sound mind are not hired.
That's terrible. Oh, that explains that they're taking all of these...
they specifically screen for sociopathic personalities, and apparently those files are all kept at the University of Manitoba, right here in Manitoba, for any cop that's hired for the RCMP.
Mm-hmm.
And they specifically screen for sociopathic personalities.
Oh.
So they want people that will commit aggressive acts of violence without question.
And not feel bad about it.
And not feel bad about it.
And not feel anything, really.
There you go. So for all those people that get on my case for giving cops a hard time and swearing at them and calling them a bunch of cocaine-snorting, child-molesting sacks of shit, well, you know what? I'm probably right.
Yeah, you probably are. If they're screening it like that on purpose,
You know what? I was at a party, a house party a couple of years ago. It was a pool party, just a calm, relaxed environment. The one guy that got completely out of control, got drunk, started pulling his penis out and showing all the girls, and that kind of
the
stuff.
Cop?
It was a cop, and he was the only one at the party. And I just started laughing and said, "Yeah, go figure." And the guys that were there were like, "Yeah, you should see his friends. They're all cops."
I was like,
"I do not want to go to that house party."
And they run in packs. This is so scary.
Yes, they do. So
okay,
yes,
guys,
you're absolutely correct.
Yikes. All right, I just wanted to mention that because I know you get so many Skype. I don't send stuff unless I think it's important.
Awesome. No, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sarah, for your contribution.
Bye. Sure.
Okay, guys, we've come again to an end of another amazing episode. But before we leave, I want to remind you guys that it seems to me that running overtime is becoming a regular practice here. And I feel bad for the people who are calling or are joining us from UK or abroad. They can't seem to use the Skype-to-Skype feature on the episode page to call in for free. So here's a suggestion I might want to put out to you guys, and see you guys let me know on the either by email to Tony at globalfact2012.com or on the Global Fact Facebook group. Let me know what you think. See, our current plan right now allows us for 2 hours of live stream and then about 45 minutes of overtime. If I was to upgrade to another, to the higher plan, it gives us 3 hours of live streaming and 45 minutes of overtime. We don't have to make the show 3 hours. It will still be 2 hours. But at least that way, if we go into the overtime, it will still be on the live stream and everybody will be able to tune into that. If you'd like that idea, then I'm going to have to ask you for some donations because the higher plan is more expensive. It's actually more than twice as costly as the plan we're on right now. So if you like that, send me an email so you'd like to contribute, and then I'll go ahead and upgrade the plan. And the last thing I want to add is that keep your eyes and ears open over the next couple of weeks where me and Dean will unveil the whole concept of that is known, that is going to become to be FU, Freedom University. Dean, you have any closing comments?
No, I'm all good, man. I enjoyed tonight. So, let's get people on the forum again. The forum's actually been growing beyond my expectations. We actually surpassed what I was hoping for the end of January, and it's only January 20th. So come on out, get involved, and the Toronto conference is going to get posted there within the next several weeks. And as of today, I'm video logging again, and let's just give more energy to our movement and less to the one that we want to go away. That's all I got to say.
All right, that was another great show. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. I'm going to close it off with our theme song, and we'll see you again next month. By the way, Dean, do you have any idea what the next week's topic is going to be?
I have no idea yet. I'm going to wait to see what people get back to me with over the next few days to see where some confusion may be.
Okay, then as soon as I hear from Dean with the next topic, I'll post it on the Global Facts fan page. Thank you all for tuning in, and sayonara. See you all next week.
About destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? You know it's gonna be alright, alright, alright. You say you got a real solution. Money for people with minds that hate. All I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. All right. All right. Anyone, anyhow. All right.
You're listening to Global Fact Radio.